It's unusual for us, but we definitely wanted to make time to be able to hear what you guys were wanting to talk with us about. So feel free, launch in.
We kind of thought that this would be the easiest way to get to all at one time.
Yeah.
This is great, and we appreciate it very much. I'm Cy Myers, little aged, but I'm still kicking around, and I live in Lewis County. This is Mike McDonald. He's from Clark County here. We're with Ascot Resources, which is a mining company. We jointly own some acreage in the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest with the Forest Service people, and we hope to drill some test wells up there again. We've drilled some and found it very interesting and some mineral activity, and find out just how big this could be. And while this is located in Skamania County, the best access is through Randall and Lewis County that way. Mike and I were up there the other day, and it's on Mount Margaret or Goat Mountain, whichever name you prefer. We've met with county commissioners around in Lewis County. They've endorsed the project. And Clickstat County commissioners have, and Skamania County commissioners have endorsed the drilling. The only thing we're asking for is the privilege of drilling to see what is there. And we've also met with her congresswoman, Jamie Herrera Butler. She's endorsed it. Most all the legislators in the area have endorsed this project moving forward to find out how viable it could be. So on the details, Mike's going to talk to you about that.
Yeah, and we'll talk about, we've kind of been at this for a little while. We were able to apply for our prospecting permits in 2010 and received our letter of concurrence from the Forest Service. And we drilled our first round of core sampling in 2010, where we drilled 11 test holes. And we learned quite a bit of information while we were out there. Kind of one of the big things is we went 1,500 feet deep on some of these test holes, and the biggest thing that we learned was that the deposit goes deeper than 1,500 feet. So we've got quite a bit of studying ahead of us before we can figure out kind of what the next steps are. And when we got geared up to do our second round of core sampling in 2011, we had got our letter of concurrence from the United States Forest Service, and we're getting geared up to start in August. Keep in mind, this is seasonal drilling at this point. You know, it gets pretty snowy up there in the wintertime, and it's pretty hard to justify work up there. So when we got geared up for that second round, there was a lawsuit that was brought against the United States Forest Service for the inconsistency of the way they hand out their permits, basically. And what that was about was, when you apply for your prospecting permits, there isn't a required environmental assessment. They have all the rules and the regulations that you need to follow from the Forest Service, and they have someone who comes up there to make sure everything's going great. And we had a very successful track record in our first round of 2010. So when that lawsuit came up, instead of us sitting on the sidelines, since we were indirectly affected by it, we decided to complete an environmental assessment about our core sampling, and we have been going through that process now for about the past 18 months. We had hearings in Morton, Stevenson, and in Longview.
What happened with that lawsuit?
The lawsuit, it was basically pushed aside. So they brought the suit, which would be an injunction, I guess. I'm not a lawyer.
An injunction not to stop the activity?
Yes. And then, so what we decided to do...
And how did it come out?
We just got this finished right now. We went through all the hearings and everything, and they had a finding of no significant impact, and the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management have approved our prospecting permits, and we just got through the appeal process, which was filed by the Gifford-Pinchot Task Force back in, I think it was in February, early February.
In other words, the Forest Service and mining operations prevailed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And the appeal has already been decided at the higher courts?
Yes, it was decided end of March. I want to say the 22nd.
Okay.
Yeah, and all this information is also on the Bureau of Land Management's website. So, I mean, if you wanted to, I could email you guys a link to something like that, and it has all their documents that they've printed out and every little step that we've gone through so far. And just to quickly get to, you know, what our plan is to move forward with the exploration, the area that we're looking to explore, there are two portions. There's a portion that is privately held and a portion that is publicly held. And so we're looking to explore the whole area. Originally, it was all one claim back in the 70s owned by Duval Corporation. But after the eruption of Mount St. Helens, there was a portion of the land that was donated to a public trust. And it has a two paragraphs, basically, that says what the land should be used for. And in the last two sentences of those paragraphs, it says not to exclude the potential of mining for the future. So we're just trying to pick up the pieces where everyone else has left off on this project, continue to study it, and then to determine what the next steps are going to be. And so the area is 900 acres. What's kind of nice for us is the roads have already been built in the area, so we'll just have to be reactivating. It's 1.7 miles worth of road up in the area. So, I mean, what's, you know, we just have to get a grader up there and then our roads will be able to go. The way these work is we have a drill that we use, and it does directional drilling up and down, and it can also go at an angle. And what we'll be doing is we have identified 23 drill pads up along those roads, and we're going to drill 63 holes off of those, and that should hopefully give us enough information and let us know if we need to do more exploration, if it's a worthwhile activity, or, you know, if it's just not worth it.
And in particular, what would be pay dirt? What are you looking for?
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. The four minerals that we've identified out there are copper, gold, silver, and molybdenum.
Copper, very heavy.
And so we're just in the early stages of studying it, trying to determine kind of what the next steps would be.
Mm-hmm. When you say copper very heavy, what do you mean?
The major mineral that's deposited is copper.
Oh, that's what you expect to find most?
Yes, that would
probably
be the highest one.
Okay. And if you were to locate it, then what?
Then, well, you have to start, you know, going through your putting your plan of extraction together, and then applying for a mining lease, which would automatically start triggering your environmental impact studies and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And we don't really want to get too far ahead of ourselves yet, just because we're still in the exploration phases, and we haven't identified what a method of extraction would be yet. That's what our exploration drilling is going to lead us to. Mm-hmm. Have factual information to lead us to those answers.
Yeah, that is located, which county is it in?
It's technically in Skamania County. It's in the most northwestern corner of it.
And so the question is, why would you be talking to Clark County?
Well, you guys are kind of the biggest county in the area, and we just thought there's been a couple articles written us in the Columbian that we would just come and talk to you and let you know what's going on, keep you informed. And that's really all we're trying to do, is just share some information with you today. Mm-hmm. You know, we really don't have an ask for anything from the Clark County Commissioners, but we just thought it would be great to keep you guys informed with what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm hoping that they would share the rewards.
Well, one of the things is anytime you have business, and this is a form of a business, that's typically a good thing. How much, I assume that there'd be some jobs involved for that county?
Yes, and at this point, it's pretty low.
Hey, you're doing your homework.
Yeah, at this point in the exploration, I mean, our employment numbers aren't extremely high. For example, we've got this question a lot, or how many people are going to be on the drill crew? And there's going to be about 18 to 24 people on that. We're still awaiting the letter of concurrence from the Forest Service before we make all those final decisions. And we have six of them from within the company in Ascot, and then the rest of them are going to be local hires from the area. And for example, you know, we don't do the building of the roads in the area, so we contract that out with local companies. You know, for example, we also don't do the security up there. We contract that out with another local company. And all those little other side jobs that are going to come up along with something like this.
Okay.
Sounds exciting.
Sounds good. Sure.
Yeah, and we just wanted to let you guys know what was going on, and, you know.
And I'll keep, I'll track it and keep you guys informed, and if they need to let you know something, I'll do that. But yep. I've got their cards.
I expect that this is remote enough that you're not going to have neighbors that are going to be negatively impacted.
I don't think there's any neighbors around there.
No, it's more recreational people.
You'll find them.
They'll
find you.
They'll find you.
And folks along the Green River, there's a lot of folks. Folks concerned would be the
traffic.
River, and then also recreational people. Mm-hmm.
Well, we haven't heard. Oh, traffic, yeah, up and down the road, so that's always a concern. Because the road we use is 26 road up in the forest, And that's, if you've never driven on it, I took Cy up there the other day, it's pretty rough. You know, it's not a not a highway.
I've spent the night in the
paved.
Snow on that road.
It's what?
It's paved, right?
Oh, yeah. It's well, portions of it.
Up to a certain
time. Yeah. Okay.
It used to be.
Yeah, it used to be. Yeah. There's pretty good patches right now. So
Does that road lead to more Calhoun County or Clark County highways?
Skamania County.
So it goes.
The 26 does. Yeah. What, the way we access is through Randall, and we start on the 25 road. And the 25 road, if you follow that around, that can take you all the way back into Cougar.
Yeah, that links you back to Calhoun all the way. Keep going.
Yeah.
Backside of the mountain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I expect that each one of us can give you some feedback individually. My feedback to you is that the idea of responsibly developing natural resources is a good thing. Economic activity, however small or medium or large, is a good thing. Every job counts, and those resources end up going into the economy. Those natural, those minerals, those metals, our economy needs them. So, yep, you have my encouragement. In order for you to even just get through the process in this state, it's a pretty difficult thing already. So, if I know that you need to address that, and just in order to get permission to do it. So you certainly have my encouragement to do so.
And you certainly, most of the regulations you're under are federal regulations under the mining laws, right?
Correct, yes. Yeah. The Bureau of Land, the way it basically works is the Forest Service is in charge of the surface area. The Bureau of Land Management is in charge of what goes underground.
Right. Cool.
So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. You got your hands full.
So when do you expect? Yeah. When are the next steps?
Well, we're waiting for a letter of concurrence from the Forest Service. And the term we're using now is June-ish, is when we should begin with our core sampling.
Okay.
And I believe it's just one drill at this point that we'll have running. We're seeing if we can do two. That way, it'll keep going. And when you get your prospecting permits, you're allowed to continue for 2 years, which would be two seasons for us. And then you have the ability to renew it to continue for another 2 years before you have to go through a separate kind of process.
Do you expect over that two-year time frame to be doing enough drill testing to be able to figure out if extraction is worth it? Or
yes, we believe in the two seasons we are going to get our 63 holes off the 23 drill pads. And then that information will lead us to know if we need to do more core sampling or what the next step is going to be.
Got
you know, at this point, it's just continuing to study and know as much as you can before you try to move forward.
Makes sense.
So you must have a lot of patience because this sounds like a long-term process.
It's been a while. Yeah, mm-hmm. we've been met with quite a bit of delay. We were, you know, when we went through our hearings and everything, we were supposed to have this decision that the BLM and the Forest Service put out in December. We were supposed to have that June 1st of last year. So that's just an example of how much delay has gone on so far. And right now we just got through the appeal process and are refiling those permits. So June-ish, hopefully mm-hmm. get started up there. And also, you know, one of the other things we go out and speak with a lot of the other commissioners and representatives and people in the legislature, and we've offered them an opportunity during the summertime when we get things going up and drilling to have you guys come out and take a look and see what's going on. And we're still waiting for everything to get in line before that. And I've got all of your contact information, and we'll be sure to let you know when that is.
Yeah,
if you have a chance,
that
would be great.
Yeah, it would be
appreciate
great.
It.
Yeah. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Much appreciate
thanks
for coming back around. I appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you, and be encouraged.
When's the legend call right now? Is that okay?
Is it scheduled for now?
All right. Well,
it's 2 o'clock, not it's 1:45.
I told him just be ready.
Mm-hmm. How fast do you think we can get through this Vancouver issue?
All right.
How young are you?
Vancouver issue.
88.
Let's do that.
14 years old.
I think Glenn's grabbing them.
You got to go around. There's people coming.
I know. I'm trying to actually get out of the way so there's those chairs.
Gotcha.
Interesting. What makes you wonder, how did they even get started on that project?
The mining rights existed well before the blast, and so they were actually doing some mining years and years before the blast. And so then the blast shut it all down, and so now they're just trying to get up and going again.
That's where
they're
good.
Yeah, they were mining on there for years. What's that?
This company back
over here, Bill.
I think that's got bought the mining rights from the company that used to have it.
They came in and bought everything and started it over.
Yeah.
It's been pretty controversial in Cali.
The extraction methods are somewhat controversial. All right. Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We hear you want to save our taxpayers some money. We like that.
Big bucks.
Exactly. Tell us a little bit about why you're here.
Actually, should I do an introduction?
Yeah.
Kelly,
yeah,
this is Lloyd Tyler. He's the finance director. I got right for the city of Vancouver, and Lloyd, if you want to introduce your partnership.
Yes. Bill Doyle from Oric and Steve Janik from Ball Janik. These individuals worked with the city 10 years ago on the original bond financing, and we're looking at taking advantage of great low interest rates to do a refinancing and save the taxpayers some money. So.
Thanks, Lloyd. So do you want to kind of walk us through a little bit as far as the refinance itself?
Or
Bronson, do you want to lead on this?
Yeah, why don't I start off, and then I think these gentlemen are here just to answer any questions that you might have about the refinancing as opposed to doing a presentation.
So
I gave you a packet of a staff report and a Board of County Commissioner resolution, which would be considered next Tuesday to concur with the county PFD's approval of the refinancing.
Okay.
And the reason that we asked you to take that action is that in 2003, when we formed the PFDs and we did the Vancouver Conference Center project and the Exhibition Hall projects, which are both PFD-related projects, the county and the county PFD did an interlocal agreement in which the county PFD said that they, before they contract to finance a regional center, they would seek your concurrence. Mm-hmm. So that's what's on for Tuesday. But going back to the beginning, in 2003, we did a number of agreements that were related to the conference center that's located at the Hilton. And as part of those agreements, the county PFD pledged some of its sales and use tax revenue to the conference center project. Now that sales and use tax is a diversion of some of the state sales tax that we are entitled to if we form a PFD and do a regional project. So it's not an additional tax, it's just a piece of the state tax that goes to the county.
And that state tax was something that went to the state and wasn't coming back here anyway, right?
That's right. So it was a good thing to form the PFDs and to get some of that state tax revenue into local projects.
It works a lot like that economic development bill we ran this year would have mm-hmm. shot back that percentage of 0.09.
One of the things that we anticipated when we did the agreements in 2003 is that given the length, the duration of the financing, there could be an opportunity to take advantage of fluctuating interest rates and refund the debt, the bonds that were issued in 2003 with bonds today, 2013, at a lower interest rate. And so we built a piece of the agreement to say that the city PFD could participate in a refunding of those 2003 bonds so long as the debt service on the new bonds would be no more than $5,000 a year above the existing debt service structure. So if it was just a hair above, that would be okay. Actually, the 2013 bond issuance, it's going to be substantially less debt service. So that's the good news.
Do we have a fixed interest that we're paying on the original bonds?
Yeah.
What is that?
Basically 5.5% is the average interest rate. So and interest rates are obviously a lot lower now. We're expecting something in the 3.75% range by doing the refinancing, so fairly significant.
How much debt remains on that?
About there is about $63 million remaining outstanding.
We start over on the term?
The term just continues as it exists now. There is one piece that would be extended, but it's relating to the mortgage on the property.
So there'd be no extension because the repayment to the county, it kicks in at the earlier of 2028 or when the bonds are paid off. So you're not extending the term of the bonds as
during the
subject
during
to repayment
the time
to the
period that relates to the county's contribution of the sales tax. So up to 2028, it's lower debt service. And it meets the requirements of the refinance.
So, and I'm going to address that a little bit. Duration and part of what we're doing is clarification of the duration. So, the way that the new bond debt service is structured is that there are just going to be a substantial savings at the beginning, and that will be used to do some improvements and refurbishment of the Hilton and the Conference Center. It's 10 years old and operating 10 years to maintain it to a standard that the Hilton would operate it. There's things that have to be done. I think the existing TVs are like tube TVs.
They replaced those.
Did they? Okay, I mean, there's just some.
Actually, they were black and white tube TVs.
So not only is there a benefit from reducing the debt service, but some of the savings are going to be used to be put back on the project.
When you say the savings, you're talking about just simply the what normally would go out just simply for debt service.
Yep.
You're not talking about adding any extra principal.
Correct. And I'll just confirm that.
And that's accurate. Yeah. Basically, the debt burden is being reduced, and what would have been used to pay debt without a refinancing can be used to facilitate the scheduled and planned capital mm-hmm. investments.
For how many years?
Well, essentially, the current capital program is over the next 3 to 5 years, and that program is about a little over $5 million. So there'll be another capital program 8 to 10 years out again, and then so it's on a regular cycle.
And that cycle is required by Hilton, or else they can terminate the operating agreement and the reservation agreement, which obviously we don't want to see happen.
When you say the cycle, in other words, there's some agreement that says we must have capital investment to revamp.
Yes.
This is the, what do you call it, the conference center?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
How much is going out each year now for the debt service?
Currently, it's about $4.3 million for principal and interest.
Okay.
And it goes up a little bit every year, so it's an escalating annual debt service rather than flat.
And so it's $4.3 million now that's going out. So the new debt service schedule would be about, 60% of that?
Well, roughly it would be saving $1 million plus per year out through 2034.
Okay.
So how does getting into the buckets that you guys created those years ago... There's the 2028 end of life of the bonds. There's also the interim period where there's a bunch of buckets that if enough money flows into this bucket, it overflows into the next and into the
That's
next.
Correct.
And several buckets down the road, there's a county bucket. 14 buckets down the road. There's a county bucket. So the question is, with that county bucket in the interim, if you're putting money into the capital, I'm trying to figure out, is there is there already something worked out into the agreement as far as, money that flows in and over and into the next buckets and how those capital improvements will be figured into that construct? Because, if you've got extra money, if you have extra money laying around, us with buckets down the road, kind of like things pouring into them. So how do we, how does that work within the relatively complex agreement you guys set up?
I'm, for better or worse, the architect of the buckets.
Okay.
And so, and it had to do with kind of the structuring of the original financing. And so at the top, we
pour in all the revenues, which are both the sales tax, lodging tax revenues, and net operating income from the hotel. And then you flow down through these whole series of different individual funds, and money stops up to a required amount at each level. And the nature of those funds generally are to pay both a kind of a management fees to Hilton, and they have a first level, and then if the hotel does better, then there's a subordinate management fee, and then way down, I think at 12, there's a super subordinate management fee, so it's just how to provide them an incentive to perform well. There's debt service reserve fund to secure the bonds. There's the debt service fund. There's a piece of subordinate debt that's in there. And there's also two renewal and replacement funds. And those are the funds for which that have been basically unfunded because there hasn't been enough money. And for a hotel conference center project like this, on average, whether it's done as a governmentally owned or a private sector hotel, there's a requirement of approximately 4% a year on average that you need to reinvest. You have to periodically replace the carpets and repaint and, you know, regrout the showers and all those kinds of things, new furniture, the new mattresses and whatever. And we've got Hilton, so they have all their specs, and we have to meet their requirements, internet service, you know, and how fast it is and the capacity, all these kind of things. So we're behind because we haven't had money. I mean, project, as you folks probably know, I mean, it's underperformed original projections to $28 million or something. It's not little by lot. So that the amount, there just hasn't been money available to fund most of those buckets. And as a matter of fact, we haven't even gotten all the way down to the debt service bucket, which is like second. And the city has had to kick in money every year for the pet since 2007.
Several years.
2008, something like that, in order to fully pay debt service. So the whole purpose of the refinancing is same difference as the mortgage, is to reduce our annual payments and to take money that would have been applied to pay back the bonds and take those savings and use them to fund the capital, these two capital funds, and to fund, you know, the operating reserve and all these other things. The reduction in debt service savings from the county's standpoint, if I'm sitting in the place that you folks are, is that every dollar we reduce debt service is a dollar, like, you know, that can flow farther down. So it's a refinancing is to everybody's benefit and increases the likelihood of a return on the county's investment.
So we really never had any money put away to
right.
refurbish.
Right.
Well, only because the interest rate is low right now are you able to go get that money.
That's exactly
in
right.
trouble. So we have any plan for the next 10 years where it's time to refurbish again?
Well, the refinancing, since it reduces the debt burden on an annual basis, we have the near-term capital investments, and then flows that would be going into the renewal and replacement of the capital fund in subsequent years. So, again, the refinancing looks at the short-term uh-huh. capital requirements as well as the capital requirements over the life of
so the how soon bonds. Can you start putting that in the refurbished bucket?
Essentially immediately with the
right
refinancing.
With the lower
is there any sort of performance perspectives or anything on the refurbishment and the potential increase in revenue that may occur from actually being able to attract more business? I mean, if you're doing refurbishments, I assume that you're doing it for a reason, and the reason would be able to get more business. I mean, has there been any analysis
it's actually,
on that?
Yes, is the short answer. And the difficulty, folks, is that it won't be to get new business. It'll be actually just to maintain the existing business, because if we can't do the investment of $5.5-6 million over the next two and a half years, Hilton can take their marbles and go home. And so then you end with a lesser flag, or, you know, and then your room rates and go down, and your occupancy goes down. Hilton, half of the 50% of the guests at the hotel are Hilton Honors members, which means that, you know, Hilton, you know, points, whatever you call those things, you know, programs, attracts a lot of overnights. And the average Hilton Honors, you know, person staying there spends, I think, 22% more than the non-Hilton Honors. So maintaining Hilton brand is, I can't overstate this, it's critical to the project just staying in business. So
yeah. Let me ask you, suppose Hilton, suppose we didn't end up having this big capital program to revamp things, and worst case happened, Hilton said, we're going to take a marbles, go home. Now what? What happens?
Short answer, we'll go into default. That's the short answer. Because we're already, you guys, kind of at the razor's edge in terms of, because we're within 150,000 or 200,000, or have been for the past number of years, with the city backstop of having enough to pay the mortgage, having enough to pay the loan.
And then what happens?
And so if you have, the likely first thing would be you lose Hilton flag.
Okay, suppose we did.
And then you have to find, either you have a vacant property, which means bonds go into default because you're now generating no net operating income, whereas currently I think we're generating like $2 million a year in net operating income that's applied to pay debt service, and that's after paying expenses. So you have the prospect of simply an empty property. The likelihood, though, is you're going to then you want to find a replacement a tenant. But to bring in a replacement tenant, you won't be able to bring in a Hilton or a Hilton equivalent. You know, there's all, you know, there's Sheratons and Marriotts and, you know, different. So you bring in somebody. You would hope to bring in somebody, but it'll be a kind of a lesser level, and they're going to need to do a refurbishment themselves, and we're limited because we have tax exempt bonds in terms of the type of deal that we can cut with the operator. Seriously limited, and you may have a challenge simply finding a operator willing to take over the property, unless you do like you do in like commercial, you know leases where you have to pay for the tenant build out, you know. And there's no money to do that, you know. So it's a scenario that you just really, it's a catastrophic scenario for everybody.
Are there three basic entities involved? Vancouver City, Clark County, and Hilton?
Downtown Redevelopment Authority.
Yeah, DRA.
And then the City Public PFD. Facilities District. The City PFD receives the county sales tax credit back. The county PFD receives the county portion that's contributed. The Downtown Redevelopment Authority, or the DRA, is the entity that provides the oversight of the Hotel Convention Center. That board approves the budget and again, provides the ongoing oversight. City Council's role is really very limited, and the city's role is primarily in the form of contingent guarantees in support of the bonds, and that role has been utilized in recent years.
Well, so one of the things, and I appreciate your allowing us to participate and answer questions. So, one of the things that is, from my standpoint, I'm a municipal bond lawyer, and so you know, and I do a lot of these kinds of financings, the tax exempt hotel financings. Usually, they're in connection with either a conference or a convention center or an airport. And I've done that and work in both. But what one of the situation we're in, because of the significant underperformance of the project relative to the original studies that were done. Is that we've got to come up with a lot of money quickly to just keep the project afloat. And I'm currently actually going through another refinancing of our home because interest rates continue to remain extraordinarily low. And one of the things that you can do, which we're doing, you know, in our refinance, is when you take out the new loan, you actually get to skip the next payment, you know. Next payment or two, and we're kind of got it so we can skip two. We don't have to make next payment until June. There's a very similar phenomenon, opportunity here that's unique, though, for the outstanding bonds, because the next payment coming due is on July 1, and there is money, you have to set aside money, you know, on the bond documents on a monthly basis to make that payment. So we have $1,700,000 or thereabouts in the debt service account, and if we get the refinancing done within the next 7 or 8 weeks, we can free up that $1,700,000, and that money can then effectively be, it's part of the money that we can then use effectively to pay a big chunk of the capital reinvestment costs.
And none of this money, none of the savings can be actually siphoned over to general fund or anything like that, right?
Nobody's. You guys, what we're literally doing, we're not creating more money. We're trying to dig out of a pretty deep hole. And the only way to do that is through refinancing. And it's going to be a challenge at that. It's still going to be a challenge. And what we end up with is in a place where the project becomes sustainable, whereas if we don't do anything, it's not.
Got it. Bronson?
So this has been reviewed by the county finance team, and the finance team recommended that we move forward with the refinancing. It was reviewed by the county PFD. They unanimously voted to move forward with the refinancing. So it's coming for your concurrence on Tuesday. I can't say that end of the day, you know, that bottom bucket, are we going to get our money back out of the project that we put into it? I can't say. I can say that to the extent that we can reduce the debt service, yeah, you know, we're a dollar closer for each dollar we save. So it's in our interest to approve the refinancing.
Yeah, I have a concern. The delay of payment, month or two, you still have to pay and the interest on that. So
you sure do.
Not as good of a savings as you'd like to have.
And part of it is just, you're right, is timing of, you know, when you make a payment. But remember, we're borrowing the new money at a significantly lower interest rate. Yeah. We're hoping to be somewhere in the, you know, mid to upper 3%, you know, compared to 5.56, I think, is the average yield now. And there's $62 million, you know, of outstanding debt. 60 plus the subordinated is 63.5, I think, something like that. So the heart surgery or the patient will die kind of thing. And so you guys, to Bronson's point.
Yeah, I think you're going to need those 2 months in order to gather enough real capital.
But we're doing, because we're going to only have to set aside less every month going forward, we can redirect monies that would have had to go to pay, you know, the monthly debt service set-asides. Mm-hmm. It'll go, in the flow of funds, it'll go past the debt service fund into the renewal and replacement fund. So it'll start to fill that up, at which we just absolutely have to do. And the other thing that we're doing from a structuring standpoint or open plan to do is, you know, when you do the home mortgage, that ends up, you just take a slice. It's the same all the way for the balance of your, whatever the mortgage term is. Here, because we're doing a bond financing, we can pick where the bonds come due. We're going to take lesser savings that long, but more savings right up in the first 2 years, and those revenues, therefore, we can use to, essentially, we're playing catch up to pay the costs of the refurbishment program.
Yeah. Okay. So we have this on our agenda for next Tuesday. Are there other questions that the board has?
I've got a
now
number of questions.
And if you don't have answers today, no problem, because we'll see you on Tuesday for the actual hearing, since we can't make a decision here.
Here's what I'm thinking is that Tuesday, that's a very short time between now and then to get the research done for us to make a financially responsible decision. Is there some, to me it feels like a hasty decision. We just get this in Tuesday, it's like, so the question is, can we have some more time on this?
Well, there is the pressure of...
Like 1 week more?
Well,
I apologize for the shortness of time. And this is, without getting the details, this is really complicated to do. Because right now, the bonds are way underwater. They're so far underwater, the sunlight doesn't get down that deep. And we still have a lot of work to do to get this done in time. And we really have one bite at the apple here, because if we don't come up with a lot of money very quickly, we lose Hilton as the flag. We have rating agencies. One of the things that we have to do is go to the rating agencies and get them to bless the structure and give us investment grade ratings. Those rating agency meetings, which are scheduled as late as they can be, are the week after next. So
I'm wondering, why are you just coming to us now? I mean,
they're not. I mean, why don't you go through again what we've already done as a county organization?
Yeah, we've had the proposal and we've been looking at it for maybe a month. So they didn't just come to us today.
Okay.
As I said, it did go to the county finance team. We did review it. It then had to go to the PFD, and that's been done. And I guess what I would point out is that in 2003, we addressed the potential for the refunding or the refinancing, and we set out the parameters of if you came back to us with debt service that was less, or no more than $5,000 more, you know, we would approve that, or they could move forward with that. And so there's...
Okay, I'll divide. Well, then, if you don't mind, even though we typically have a lot of stuff on our board time, because time is short, I like to ask some of these questions now and extend this. I mean, because we don't have much time.
We're here to answer questions.
Okay.
And because so my bottom line is, I think, you know, this is in everybody's interest.
Before we get into the question and answer period, I am comfortable with what I have heard from the finance team and from your team and from others that this will save taxpayers money and is necessary to move forward. But I totally respect your need to and your desire to get some questions answered. I guess what I'm looking at you for is that something you want to take, you know, a significant amount of time for board time, which we have been short on, actually allowing our staff to get in on our actual staff meeting.
I think that we might answer those questions between now and the hearing. But more importantly, we've done a whole bunch of refinance ourselves with the county and have saved millions and millions of dollars. I see this as nothing but a positive thing, because for the first time, you're going to have that bucket for remodeling that you never had before.
Right.
The one with a low interest rate, you're able to refi right now, we'd be in a big, big pickle, because you wouldn't have that investment back to put back in there. So I too am comfortable with our finance people having reviewed it over the last month, and I respect the commissioner wanting some questions that maybe we could submit to them.
Or I guess my request would be that you gentlemen make yourselves available to meet with Commissioner Madore to be able to directly answer his questions.
Or
however it works best for you,
Commissioner. Let me ask you just for a couple of basic questions here first, because this is not just getting me up to speed. I don't expect that you know the answer to these questions at this point either. And that is that I don't have any problem at all with refinance. That's not the issue. Mm-hmm. Certainly we can save taxpayer money by going out and getting refinancing. Yeah. That sounds good. The question I have, it has to do with this other thing that's attached to it. We have this capital investment that's going to empty millions of dollars out of these buckets. And one of those questions is, in this 14-bucket array here that we finally get to the county, as a capital investment, this extra work that's going to revamp, is that in a line above the county?
It is.
Yes. Okay. And if it is, who's in charge of that, and how do we know that that is, I mean, you're talking about millions of dollars, and don't we divide this into two sections? The conference area itself compared to the hotel,
right.
The amount of money that's going to capital improvements, how much of that actually goes to the conference center part of it versus the whole hotel?
In response to one of your questions, there is an independent trustee that holds all the funds and actually disperses funds based on the trust indenture. So as funds go through the waterfall, it's the trustee's fiduciary and legal responsibility to ensure that they're being applied to the various funds and accounts as the agreement stipulates. So they won't go out of order And they've always gone through the flow of funds based on the trust indenture.
Does the county have any say-so, any control, any influence as to the amount that goes into the capital improvements? How much comes out of there?
Well, that's all established by the agreement with Hilton and the bond indenture.
And the bond financing.
So that's beyond our control to have any influence.
That ultimately is something that was determined by investors to put together a financing that investors would buy, 10 years ago. Because the bonds are payable in significant part from the revenues of the Hotel Conference Center project, investors wanted to make sure that, among other things, that the capital reinvestment, kind of the periodic refurbishment that you need to do, that there'd be monies available to do that. So it wasn't something that kind of the city or the DRA or something kind of arbitrarily came up with, that the interests, everybody's interests in terms of the participating local governments is in minimizing that and getting some money to go as far down the flow as possible. So the city has the same interest in that respect generally as the county does, and that is to minimize costs. And the DRA has a consultant referred to as an asset manager that's very typical in kind of the hospitality industry, as between owners of hotel properties and operators. You have an asset manager representing the interests of the owners, and their job is to bang on Hilton. And when Hilton says, golly, we need gigabyte capacity, we say, well, you don't need that, or the asset manager. So there is the system is set up, with checks and balances so that the interests of the local governments that are participating are protected as against the interests of Hilton and the interests of investors.
Mr. John?
Commissioner, just to give you a sense of this, mm-hmm. and I apologize, I've got laryngitis. The operating agreement with Hilton is over 111 single-space pages, and 20 or so of those pages are devoted to repair and replacement, and then there are schedules that show exactly what is to be replaced at what time. So it's not like we just have a bucket of money and we give it to Hilton. Yeah. Hilton can only spend it according to the terms of that agreement, and then that agreement is overseen by the DRA, the asset manager, and then the trustee of the bond.
Trustee.
So there are some very, very tight controls. Hilton doesn't have much discretion among those various controls.
Okay. I will reserve the rest of my questions for...
Was that helpful, though?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can tell, probably. I like to answer questions, so you ask questions.
Yeah, I would like to be able to make sure I get your contact information
sure.
So that we can effectively, I'll give you my cell phone.
The good thing is that if you send your questions to them, mm-hmm. they can answer them to
for every.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, answer them to the presentation.
Although I think it's wise for us to get as many of these answers done ahead of time so that Tuesday is informative to the public.
Yeah.
And there's no surprises there.
I guess the question is, what would happen if we did not do this? We first of all, we can't refurbish as required in every 10 years. We have no money to do it. That bucket never got filled up. This gives a rash of money right now to fulfill the obligation that we weren't able to do over the past 10 years.
Right.
And
yeah.
with a lower payment, more of our profits could go back into filling those buckets in the future, which will fulfill that, as you mentioned.
Yeah, got that part. Okay. I don't have any reservations on the refinancing.
No.
Really, my question comes down to, at this point, are we faced with a up or down, yes or no, and there's no other parameters or options that we have any control or influence on?
Yes.
That's a yes.
We didn't do it. It was the board before us,
not us.
Well, that makes it simpler.
By way of disclaimer, let the record reflect. The current Board of County Commissioners.
Yeah.
Oh, we're on the record. So that's fine. Yeah. All right.
Had nothing to do with the decision to proceed.
So between now and next Tuesday, we'll get information back and forth. Please do leave your contact information. For Commissioner Mador. Excellent.
I'm paid by the word, so. More questions.
Exactly. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in and actually sharing this with us
before
the meeting.
Appreciate it.
So,
thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank
you.
Thank you very much for your help.
Yeah,
we appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Call me anytime.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you
much again.
Open or close?
Open.
Thank you.
How close is it? Kind of raised the temperature.
It is already warm.
I haven't heard any of those.
I tell you.
All right, legislative call.
I knew we were in.
Hey, Mike, it's Axel. It's good. So in the room, you got Kelly, Bronson, Mary's with us, Glenn, and the Board of Commissioners are all here and present. We don't have Eric from the Columbian, but we are on the record. So we didn't print up an agenda today, so I'm just going to let you go. I think it's mainly going to be the House and Senate budget, correct?
Yeah, if I got you an agenda, that's all it would have said anyway. So
okay, great.
Couple things. Just kind of always seem to start these calls with where we're at in session. We are on day 94 of 105, so that means we will sine die not this coming Sunday, but the following Sunday.
Sure, you will.
Yeah, it was just I guarantee you we'll sine die, Commissioner. We'll show up the next day and start again.
That's the word.
That's right.
I do think there's truth to that. I do think there's no way there will not be a special session. I guess that's a double negative, but there will be a special session. I don't see any way around that right yet. Other big news. Representative Bolt stepped down today as leader. He's going to remain in the legislature, but he will no longer be the leader. That will be Representative Kretz from the 7th Legislative District, I believe.
I want to spell his name.
I'm sorry?
How do you spell his name?
Kretz, K-R-E-T-Z. He lives in Wakanda, which is...
Washington?
Yeah. He's almost... I think he's 2.5 hours kind of northeast of Chelan, is the way I understand it.
Wow.
It's a long time. He's a
that's
horse,
a very good way of saying way out there.
That's
oh, yeah, I guess it's beautiful. My wife wants to go there because he's got a horse ranch. He's a horse guy. So, anyway, I may pay him a visit this summer. But anyway, he will be the acting leader. I don't know that they've decided whether or not they will do a reorganization or not. So... anyway, that just happened this morning.
Wow.
So
mm-hmm. Axel mentioned the House and Senate budgets. So where we are is today is the opposite House Policy Committee cutoff. But both bodies have released their budgets. I think when we talked last week, the House budget had come out. I just hadn't looked through it yet. I've had a chance to go through it and have some of the highlights that I'll run through with you real quickly. But both bodies are still working on getting their revenue proposals out. That support their funding assumptions. And I'll kind of walk through some of those here in a minute. From a total spending standpoint, the House budget spends about $1 billion more. It relies on $1.3 billion in new revenue and does that through a variety of fund source, or excuse me, transfers and then revenue increases, like I said. As a specific to counties, it keeps the shared revenues that flow most of your criminal justice dollars intact, much like they were in the Senate. So we're in a good position there. As it pertains to public health dollars, you're whole on public health, though the Senate budget does more of a block granting of the dollars directly to counties or public health districts rather than in the House budget. They go through the traditional mechanism where they would put it into three different funds.
Hey, Mike, on the public health side, we had heard about that at Legisteering last time.
Right.
Our new director of health, I think, is going to be speaking to us at lunch tomorrow.
He is.
That's awesome. Yeah, so John Wiesman is going to be speaking to the Legislative Steering Committee of WASAC tomorrow. Department of Health was adamantly opposed to the block granting of funds, giving direct distribution to the counties, even though the administrative costs at Department of Health are extreme. Do you have any sense with the new director? Has he had any statements out there yet? Because we're definitely going to grill him on it.
I believe he has indicated he prefers the House position.
Remind me?
Which is not with the not the block granting.
What happened? He was a county guy. It's been like a week.
I think, Commissioner, at lunchtime tomorrow, you could have a chance to remind him of that.
I will definitely do that.
But I think it'll be worth the discussion to talk about that. The best way to get these services to folks is to drive the money directly to them, as you mentioned, through the administrative costs.
I was hoping he'd last a little bit longer than that.
A lot of the county folks were saying that today, Commissioner Zonke.
I bet.
So in talking about the revenue increases that the House budget relies upon, there are several, and whether or not the tax increase or not is open to argument, and I say that because the removals of exemptions, so I guess if you were privy to the exemption and it no longer were there, you would think it's a tax increase, and the B&O extension, which is another big one, but within their proposals is removing the non-resident sales tax exemption. We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. There is a hearing on that piece of legislation Friday morning. As a part of it, though, they do exempt the purchasing of motor vehicles, meaning you will still get the tax exemption if you purchase a motor vehicle.
That was the big one we were concerned about, was the auto industry.
The large purchases. So, then based on your comment, Commissioner Stewart, am I hearing that we're okay with leaving it alone as long as that portion stays in the bill?
I am.
Oh, neutral anyways?
No. Okay. Yeah, I think we're all... Hold on.
So I understand correctly, basically, sales tax exemption for those that from Oregon that come over here, they're no longer going to be asked that question, are you a resident of Oregon or are you a resident of Washington? And so basically, the only exception to that is car sales. Everybody pays sales tax in Clark County, except for out-of-state car sales.
Yes, Commissioner, yes.
Okay.
And I'll remember, too, though, that this is a House proposal that has not even had a hearing yet. Like I said, we'll get its hearing on Friday morning. And there are still a lot of questions whether or not they even have the votes for this to make it out of the House.
So as a border county that would be actually hit by this, in theory, that would be affected by this in our business community and otherwise, I would think that it would be important for us to have our voice heard on this one and actually not just say we're in favor, but have you say we're in favor of it and talk about it's a one-way trip a lot of times for our sales tax, and that we have $15 million a year in sales tax leakage, but every time someone comes up and buys a pack of gum from Oregon, they get asked whether they're a Oregon or Washington resident, and they can fill a form out to not even have to pay that sales tax piece of it. So it seems like we would want you on the record on that.
And then they want to see my driver's license.
And then they want to see your driver's license, exactly.
Well, I'm happy to do that. Just obviously, that's your call. Knowing that the Retail Association that represents your retailers down there has consistently opposed this measure.
Who's that?
Okay.
Hold on one sec. Hold on.
Yeah, the Retail Association, they said.
Yeah.
In the past, they've had, when they attempted to do this, they would designate that those taxes would go to some special program.
Mm, good point.
And in this case, they're not saying that. This just
sir, they are. It goes to the title of the bill is, I think if they call it Funding the Education Legacy Trust Account. I'm looking it up here.
What about the local share of it, though, the 15%?
I would assume that the local portions would go to you. I don't get the indication that they're sweeping.
I wouldn't assume it either.
Well, it either does or we're going to speak
against it. I read through the bill, Commissioner, and I don't see that it's stripping the local portion. But I need to have someone, a tax-worthy person,
look at it. That's a great question, and I think you just heard from Commissioner Milkey, and I agree that if they're trying to strip all the money out and take even the portion that is local sales tax and take it on up north, as well, then we get a lot less excited about it.
The title is Investing in the Education Legacy Trust Account for K-12 Basic Education and Higher Education by Narrowing or Eliminating Tax Preferences and Extending Taxes Set to Expire.
Well, if it's the state portion of it, they can do whatever they want with it as far as I'm concerned. I just don't want them taking my money.
Okay, so I will email to...
Hold on, Mike, hold on.
Sure.
What I'm thinking is that there is no special category for this. This is countywide. How in the world could they say a portion of it goes to some special program, because anybody at any business here can say, yeah, I'm from out of state, I want that tax deduction. How in the world would they calculate what would go to a special program out of our local, out of our county tax?
It's all collected at the state level. So they take it all up to the state level and they distribute back. And so they would take the portion that is state sales tax, and it's, how much does the state sell it? 5.4? 6.?
What
is
it? 6.8.
It's 6, but what he's saying is, well, I'm getting what he's saying, I think, is that how are they going to tell out of the hole now? Because now they're not asking the question anymore. So what portion goes aside?
Oh, I got you. Sorry, I wasn't understanding.
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, right now,
they'll just figure the amount they think they'll get.
Yeah.
Which is terrible, because that we are in the process of turning loose the economy for our area, and we're going to hopefully be very successful and get a bunch of new construction going in our area. The sales tax revenue is going to increase because we're doing everything we can to get that kick started. So if they say take a benchmark now, basically they're going to be skimming off the top this new revenue.
We'll be taking our
benefit. Yeah, we need to, well, we need to answer that.
I'm sorry, I'm getting confused now.
Portion. They will only take out of their 6%
right.
what they think is the portion that's in excess of what they would have got.
So, Mike, we have to figure out how they're going to
affect us.
Determine what's new revenue for their purpose versus old.
As I understand it,
there's no feasible way for them to only increase to cover that loophole for their portion of the sales tax. It's for everybody.
What's intended to happen is, what's your rate in the unincorporated? 8.4?
8.4. And we'll pick up our piece, and we were just having a sidebar discussion. Commissioner Medore was asking about how are they going to know what to slice off to give to the education account. And I was just pointing out that they would only take a slice out of their 6%.
Correct.
Ours, we're not affected by whatever they decide. With that respect.
And if they're wrong, and if there's less money than they had anticipated, that just means less money that they can take over across to
their own
system.
What they'll do is they'll go through the normal mechanism now where the retailers remit it all, and then they cut the check back to you, correct?
Right. Yeah. You'll get more.
You should see an increase in your sales tax revenue.
Yes.
Yeah, the people that are going to really hate this are like the Westfield Mall people.
Agreed.
They're going to hate it.
Okay.
And they estimate it statewide. The amount they're going to book in the budget is $63.7 million.
Yeah, but
if you just do the math of that, what's that's the state portion. So what would you be? You'd be another third of that, correct? Because you're about 2.whatever%. Well, not all of it. Some of that goes to other.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of others.
So you'd be looking at probably $15 million-ish, a biennium.
We get about $500,000 a tenth, so kind of figure it that way.
So basically, the bottom line is our local share will surely increase because the overall sales here may take a portion of a hit, because people are going to say, well, I'm not going to pay Vancouver sales tax. But overall, the sales tax in revenue to the county should increase.
Yes.
So, Mike, I think the question still warrants asking. Just a clarification that it doesn't change. We still get our portion.
Yeah, let's verify.
Yeah, and so, Glenn, you got a pen there?
Yeah.
Section 401 of House Bill 2038.
Okay, I'll take a look at it. I'm almost sure about this, but I will verify.
Yeah, I can't imagine the state would try to suck your portion out. You'd have every legislator going nuts about it. So
before Friday, we'll verify that. You know, verify that piece of it as a key component of our support.
But so, Commissioner, assume for a minute then that it does not suck in your portion; that you will get yours remitted to you. If that's the case, then does the board has a position in favor of this? This portion of Senate Bill, or excuse me, of House Bill 2038. We're not speaking on any of the other tax provisions that are in it, because there are several. And we want to be specific in our support of that provision in the bill.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I have one question, and that is that I assume that we're kind of unique here. This kind of targets us, and that the rest of the state representatives would naturally be in favor of this, because their bottom line is, hey, it's more income for the state.
That's right.
Right? So
yes and no, Commissioner Medore. There are issues up in Whatcom County with the Canadian.
Right.
That they actually closed. There was a there was a court ruling on this that the Canadians weren't exempt from the sales tax, and the legislature switched that back and made sure that they still were. So it probably hits Whatcom and Clark counties the most.
Yeah.
Spokane does not qualify. Well, it does in the sense that Idaho, an Oregon shopper that goes to Spokane wouldn't pay the non-rent, wouldn't pay the sales tax, but an Idahoan does, because in Idaho's, it's either their own sales tax or their income tax rate isn't high enough for this to kick in. There's a threshold for the...
They have a sales tax, but it's lower, I think.
Right,
the deal.
Right. It's like 2% or something like that, and there's some reciprocity in there where it's got to get to a certain level before it kicks in. So it really affects Oregon shoppers, Canadian shoppers coming to Washington State.
So if it really doesn't affect the Idaho shoppers, then I wouldn't think they're going to be lobbying against this. I would assume that if there is a problem with Whatcom County with the Canadian shoppers, that could be a separate amendment that could say, hey, don't mess with our county. That could defuse that one. But I would think everyone else in the state would say, sure, we'll take that extra revenue. And I would think it would easily pass if that's the main thing it does.
It, Commissioner, this concept has been proposed, I believe, every year for the last 5 or 6 years, and it's never passed.
There is another part of the state at play here, though, because a lot of Oregon shoppers, because they have the big box located there, go to the Tri-Cities area where Benton and Franklin counties are. And so they're also pretty big in the game with this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple philosophical things going on here. The retailers don't like it because they want to still get business out of other states and out of Canada. And then, secondly, there is the faction here that just doesn't want any new revenue in the budgeting process.
Well, and historically, and I think it's a good move, historically, the auto dealers have been, big in killing it.
You are correct.
So, Statewide Auto Dealers Association effectively killed it a couple of times. And so, taking them out and exempting auto purchases as a major purchase, I think that's great. It gets one big reason to not pass it out of the way, and especially for us with the auto mall and things we have, it'll make sure that our auto dealers can still compete with the auto malls across the river.
So Glenn will take a look at that and review it just to make sure that they're not sweeping your local portion. And if that's the case, we are supportive of that section of the bill, and between Axe and I, we'll come up with the reasons why.
Yep.
I have to abstain from this because... I can't go on record as supporting a tax increase, and this is a form of that. So I have to abstain from this.
It's a tax increase to Oregonians.
You don't represent them. It's okay. This is a fairness issue for your constituents.
Well, I'm not voting no. I thought you guys choose.
Looking good.
All right. Go for it.
So the Clark County Board of County Commissioners has taken a position in favor of that section of the bill.
The majority has.
Remember that language we've been using on other issues?
Board of Commissioners.
I will work in a majority of the county commissioners have taken a position in favor of that portion of the bill.
With one abstention. All right. What else you got?
Okay. The next thing is the transportation package. After our conversation last week, nothing has moved in the Senate. The House did pass their bare bones budget. There were some amendments. Representative Pike offered an amendment to ask for a new EIS. It did not hang.
Party line vote, or how did the vote go down on it?
It was, the passage of the ultimate budget was party line. Her amendment, I'd have to go back and look, Commissioner, to see if it was oral roll call or not.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look, but
just
it
correct.
Didn't hang. I knew it wasn't going to hang, so I haven't looked. I just knew it wouldn't. I knew it wouldn't hang, so I didn't look. On the Senate side, still waiting to see if they are in fact going to pass that, and been working on the amendment language that we talked about last week. Next step, though, is the House on Friday afternoon will be hearing the new funding package that Chairwoman Clyburn has come forward with. This will be composed of a fuel tax of 10 cents total. It's over 4 years. It's 5-2-2-2-1. Some weight fees, a menu of fees, different ones, and there's some local option things in there too. Funded in that is the $450 million portion projected for the CRC. Also in that will be some direct distributions to local government. And then also is, and that's through CRAB and TIB, some increases there, into TIB of $50 million, into CRAB of $50 million. I don't know, I've not heard you before say you get any of the freight mobility FIMCIP money. Have you applied for grants for that before?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, there's an increase to that anyway. Over the 12-year lifespan of this project, or of this proposal, the local government portion for cities and counties would be $343 million. That's a direct distribution for local M&O. So there's kind of a menu of things in here for everybody, like there is always in a big mega package like this. But I'm scanning through the project list now, too, just to make sure there's not some other ones beyond the crossing project, and I don't see any right this second. But we don't have a complete project list either right now. We just have some of the biggies. So that hearing is on Friday afternoon. If there's still a lot of question as to whether or not the Senate has any interest in doing a transportation package, and at this point my gut tells me it won't happen, but things have changed, and the extension of going into a special session gives more time for it to be dealt with, but the current language or the current mood around here is that a revenue package for transportation would not be considered in a special session, but as we've heard those kinds of things before, and then they pop up. So that's what's happening with the transportation budget.
It doesn't take our sales tax.
It seems like it wouldn't.
Okay, let's stay on task on this, though. Yeah. Sorry. Transportation.
I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, do we have a say in this?
In what?
Seeing whether or not he's argues for or against some of these.
You're his boss. You can tell him whatever
you want. Well, no, I mean, how realistic is our influence supporting components of what of some of those items that you just listed? For instance, we certainly do not want to advocate for CRC funding, and I have a problem with raising additional taxes, like transportation taxes, because I think it's out of order. They need to clean up their act when it comes to the spending first.
So that's a great point. I was pointing at Commissioner Mielke because this is your wheelhouse, Commissioner Mielke. So that this is something that Commissioner Mielke has argued for a while, and it may be an opportunity for Mike to represent the board.
Remember the five for five package?
Mm-hmm.
They haven't made any reforms as of today.
There are a list of reforms that have been proposed by House Republicans mostly.
By House Republicans.
Those have not been. Some of them were taken, some weren't. So there are reforms to point to, off the top of my head. I know it, I haven't memorized the list, but off the top of my head, there was, some language about removing, first of all, just taking sales tax off of transportation projects. And then some have talked about reapplying the sales tax paid for construction projects to transportation. There's some issues mostly that surrounded the 520 bridge and the pontoon construction there, in terms of DOT reporting when errors have been made. There was one proposal about going down to 15-year bonding rather than 30-year. So there are a menu of reforms that have been talked about.
So the question, I think, Mike, for that, and the reason I kind of got in the middle and had Commissioner Mielke jump in is, this is something Commissioner Mielke has spoken of before. It's right in the wheelhouse of what you've said, exactly what you said, Commissioner Madore, which is the cart before the horse, that they have things backwards, that the reforms need to occur before new money is spent.
Yep.
Is that fair to say?
Yep.
So I guess the question, Mike, is that something that would be valuable to at least share that input through lobbying and, you know, through individual conversation as well as testifying at the committee level on Friday?
I think, Commissioner, bluntly put, I think it would, depending on who it is, they'll either like the comments or not like it. I don't get the sense that your delegation is movable on specific to the CRC issues. And then secondly, on the reform issues, their members of the caucus are dug in where they're dug in. And you can predict across, it's a party line issue. Does that answer your question?
So on the 10-cent proposed gas tax increase, is it job specific or just a 10-cent increase for slush fund?
Some of it's job.
Well, there's a project list, Commissioner. Oh. There's a long project list. You know, there's the 167 to 509. They call that the Gateway, Puget Sound Gateway. That's the Tacoma, the Pierce County project. There's 405, Columbia River Crossing, and then the 395, which is the north-south corridor in Spokane. Those are the four mega projects on the list. Those are the biggest ones. But then there's money for Joint Base Lewis and Corps, Snoqualmie Pass, US 12 and Walla Walla, 520. It's like all the transportation packages are. There's the big projects, and then there will be the smaller projects that show up on the list as well.
That's the carrot. They're sending out to all the legislators in their district.
Yep.
Oh, sure. So, yep, absolutely.
That's what they do.
There's no way that I can vote in favor of giving more money to the Department of Transportation. They have been one of the worst stewards I can imagine. Wasteful.
So, and I'm in a mood like that today because of some things that Commissioner Madora has shared with us. I think that Commissioner Madora, you have some of the kind of the waste and, I hate to say fraud, but the wasteful behavior of WashDOT. You have some of that information. You have a lot of that information, right?
Yep.
Okay. So this is my suggestion, Mike, and you feel knock it down, and the board can knock me down on it. But my suggestion would be that you do testify against any further spending until efficiencies have been created, because what we have seen in Clark County is a WashDOT that has not been accountable for the dollars that they have spent in what has already been raised.
That's right.
And then throw a few details at it from CRC and wrap that into the comment of, and even if you were going to move forward, the board certainly wouldn't want to see those dollars wasted on Columbia River Crossing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well spoken, Steve. Mm-hmm.
He should be a lobbyist, man. You know,
so we every once in a while,
I knew we'd convert him sooner or later.
Was that a haiku?
Yeah. It might have been. I don't know.
I think that, Commissioner Stewart, I hear what the board's saying. I'm imagining, you know, and that room's going to be loaded with, I can imagine there'll be a large contingent of pro-CRC and anti-CRC folks in the room.
Wouldn't be a surprise to any of those people that the board had that opinion.
No, exactly. My concern is from a commissioner standpoint, there's a huge project list, and there are projects that are important to others. Are my comments are specific to the Columbia River Crossing project and concerns that we have about the way dollars have been spent within the department, and I need to know what those are, and I can craft up a couple of those things to say and relay those points.
I can help you with that tomorrow.
Yeah, and related to that, when people talk about that the CRC project, give them a copy of that document that shows that the CRC staff unilaterally turn that into a light rail project. They have cut out everything that has to do with congestion relief. And when you start hearing these arguments about it being an international freight corridor, interstate commerce and all that, remind them that as of 2 days ago, the CRC has stripped all that stuff out. It's a light rail project now, clearly on its face by their own documents.
Okay, I have that. I think that's the information you had sent to me this morning, Commissioner, correct?
Yep, your document, yep.
Like I said, we can work on the testimony tomorrow, Mike.
Okay.
All right, do you have what you need on that piece of it?
Yeah, I mean, those are the two kind of big things that are left, you know, so.
Budget and budget. Anything from the board for Mike?
Anything on the
obviously
fair?
We can follow up with them, make sure we
Mike,
get the right testimony.
I know the fair funding was at issue this week. With
no, actually, there won't be anything on it until negotiations are done, so we'll see. I mean, there are folks, fair advocates, carrying forward, you know, in the budget reconciliation project saying, you know, please do this what the House did, please do this what the Senate did, but it'll all just have to play out behind closed doors as they do their negotiations. So
yeah.
I don't have any, there's no other finished budget document that is passed.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the main thing when it comes to the budget. The other thing, topic that you're in that is related to this is the county vote and a letter being circulated by the legislators encouraging that county vote.
Yes, Commissioner, and I know that legislators are contemplating that letter, and I don't know if they're going to send it or not.
Okay, well. I assume that you think that's a good idea for the legislatures to express their welcome, their invitation to hear from Clark County constituents, and that we'd respect that.
I tend to, historically, I have tended to not want them telling me how to do our business and us not telling them how to do their business. So I have tended to not be one who liked letter writing campaigns back and forth because it ends up being more ink than it is of value. So if the purpose is for the public to hear from the legislators that they think this is a good idea, then I see where you're going. For the purposes of us getting a letter from them saying, we encourage you to do this, you know, I encourage them to finish it on time and get the budget done. But, you know, I'm not going to send them a letter saying that because there's a professional... back and forth. There's a professional relationship that we must maintain. So I have traditionally not been a big fan of writing letters back and forth. That's just me.
I think you're talking about the letter that you drafted.
No.
He's saying the legislators writing a letter saying, we encourage you, yes, we want to hear from the voters and have a countywide vote instead of sending something to us.
The only thing we need to give to the legislators are any information not being considered. And I think we have one of those coming. And I understand that there's a lot of negotiation going on right now with some compromise on the transportation budget. So only anything new would be interesting.
I think we're talking about two different things. What this is, and first of all, we're not talking about letters going back and forth or a letter writing campaign.
We're talking about
our legislature is welcoming the feedback from our county, and all that does is express that they're interested in Clark County and that they certainly would not be opposed to hearing from us, because there are those, you know, those proponents who don't want an up-down vote on this project, and this and their argument is it's not your jurisdiction, what business do you have, it has nothing to do with you, it's all them, and this is really them and saying, well, no, we do want to hear from you.
That would be a letter probably to the people on Transportation Committee.
Well, no, that's from
the
state
legislators to you.
To us. It's already
be a letter saying, we think you should do it, from the legislators to us.
It's really just saying, we welcome it. Which is, in other words, Tom, in the advisory vote that we're talking about for countywide, our state senators and representatives are sending us a letter that a bunch of them are signing that says, we welcome that. We are interested to hear from you.
So wait, though. So if they want to send us a letter, they can do that anytime.
Yeah.
They have their adults. They can send a letter if they'd like to. The question I have with it is, why would we be... I mean, how are we involved in that? What are you asking of us? I mean, they're adults. They can write a letter if they want. What are you asking us?
Well, it's all about relationships.
So we're asking them to write a letter?
No, they're already writing a letter.
Well, then why do we... I mean, are you just informing us, or... I mean, what are we... I'm just trying to figure out how we're involved in this.
Yeah.
So all the legislators up there are writing a letter to us.
No, I would say those that don't want to vote won't be light, or aren't interested won't be signing on. But we can expect a letter from them saying we welcome an advisory vote from Clark County. It is something that we are interested in. Because there are those forces that are saying, no, it's just, you know, don't get involved in a vote. And yet the vast majority of our people want to vote. And the argument, there's a lot of argument for that want of people to push this through without a vote. So this is just simply just informative to us that our legislators are interested to hear from our people on this project. In other words, we're not swimming upstream doing something in opposition. The legislatures are not saying, hands off, we don't want to hear from you. They're saying, no, we are interested. We do welcome that vote.
But you're not circulating a letter to the legislators.
I am not circulating it. This is their authoring.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. I mean, that's what I was trying to. I mean, the idea that we would circulate a letter for them to sign to us is kind of weird to me.
No.
Got it. So this is information.
This is their doing.
It's an FYI. Heads up.
All right. So we got the heads up. Anything else for Mike?
I have one quick thing.
Glenn has something for you, Mike.
Hey, Mike. So testimony we're planning on giving, is it a DOT hearing?
No, it's the House Transportation Committee.
Or excuse me, it is a transportation hearing?
Mm-hmm. It is.
So just on the being my normal cautious, being kicked around at Olympia bureaucrat memories here. So what's the blowback we could get for standing up in one of those hearings and telling the department they don't know what they're doing?
Or we don't want money.
Oh, we don't want money. I mean, could they? I mean, if I was a department and I was a Department of Transportation, I could cut me off quite a few lists pretty quick. I just wondered if you think there's any real serious reasons we might want to be more circumspect.
Well, it's happened before where there's backlash, but I mean, I can envision. I guess I'd have to ask the board, are you in favor of local M&O dollars flowing out of a state transportation package? Are you in favor of more money being put into CRAB and TIP out of a transportation package?
I was thinking the same thing, Glenn, there's things in that package that we love and we always support.
And that's,
right.
And I can imagine...
That's why they do it.
I can imagine your lobbyist saying something like, Madam Chair, want to first say there are components of your budget that we do support.
Yeah.
Yes.
That being local dollars for M&O, because our roads have been hurt and the past transportation projects have not included local distribution. More money for CRAB, more money for TIP. We view those as chances to do economic development in an economy in our area of the state that's been depressed and had an abnormally high unemployment rate. But there is a project on your list that is certainly controversial in our community, and the Clark County Board of Commissioners has adopted a resolution in opposition to that project.
The additional piece, you're a great lobbyist, man. That was very, very well done. The only additional piece that I would add to that is the fact that no new money should be spent until regulatory reforms, until efficiencies have taken place. Just saying, look, you know, you don't want to, if you are going to create new money, you don't want to throw good money after bad. So you want to make sure that you get the reforms and efficiencies in place before new dollars are spent to get the most bang for the buck to help do these projects that, you know, and get the money for, you know, to the localities, blah, blah, blah.
And so then I guess if I'm going to mention those reforms, and I want to say what specifically they are, is it permitting reform or
That's what I was thinking we'd work on tomorrow. Yeah, I think Commissioner
Then I guess what I need is two reforms to be able to point to.
Right, and two inefficiencies.
Or reforms or inefficiencies can be the same thing. Just a couple, 3 points of specifics, and then, of course, the standard. And, you know, the commissioners would be happy to have a conversation with any committee members that have interest in this. But I think it's politically prudent. I think it's a smart thing to say the good things about the budget, because there are some very, you know, there's local control issues in there. There's local distribution issues, which are things that historically you've been in favor of.
Agreed. Yeah, you got head nods around the table, buddy.
I can handle it, I think, then. I've got my clear...
I believe you can.
...direction.
You got it.
I'll wear a hard hat while I'm doing it, though.
Anything else from the board for Mike?
You should be a lobbyist.
You know,
I don't know if you've thought about this.
But my wife tells me that all the time.
I bet she does.
Actually, unfortunately, our 5-year-old thinks he's a lobbyist now.
Yeah. Probably the best one in the house.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right.
All right, everybody. Yep. Thanks for your time. You're
all right.
Welcome to call anytime. Talk
Sounds
to you later.
Good. Thanks, Mike. All right. Got that one done. Bronson's been sitting around. We have invocation guidelines that Bronson is here. Actually, you're here for a few things, aren't you?
He's here for a
Yeah, they see your
Bronson,
name on a few
Bronson,
things there.
Bronson.
I don't know. So invocation guidelines. Update on that, Bronson?
I wasn't here last week when you talked about this, so I'm coming in kind of on...
And with Bill leaving, I think there was kind of a disconnect. The general discussion was working towards that. We weren't going to do the 501c3 list any longer. We were struggling with that.
The question was, and I think just to try to get to it, that the question that we had was, is there a way to make it clear that while we want to be inclusive, based on the definitions that were set, we also don't want it opened up to
know, I think the word skeptics would use, and silliness. And, you know, it's kind of skeptics and silliness. Is there a way
antagonist?
Is there a way to structure it so that it is still defensible, but that you can create some sideboards that so that it doesn't go into the realm of the ludicrous?
And just one additional piece was there was a focus on defining the word faith or faith-based organization so that you weren't encouraging the skeptics or anti-deists.
So same point, that was one way of getting at it. So the question was, is there a way of getting at it? Is that a way, or is there another way? That was the question.
So I think that, you know, you start with the purpose of the invocation is to seek some type of spiritual guidance in the performance of your business, right? Mm-hmm. So if somebody comes in who is not doing that, mm-hmm. Who is just going to come in and say, you should listen to this article from Scientific American, that's not an invocation. Mm-hmm. And that's not what our policy is for. Mm-hmm. So, but where you're going to run into trouble is when you start saying, well, we're okay with that spiritual guidance, but not this spiritual guidance. You know, and so what I suggested back to Cal was that he came up with this list of congregations, and that's the same thing that the city of Lancaster did that was approved. And so I asked, let's talk to the city of Lancaster and see how they developed their list and what do they do, because it was approved by the court. That's pretty good guidance. Mm-hmm. Well, they haven't had... Cal, you talked to him. Why don't you go ahead and just say what you learned?
Yeah, basically, they create a list every November, and what they do is they go in the yellow pages and they just write down all the different congregations that are listed in their city. So they're geographically specific. They're not getting anybody on their list that's not actually within their city boundaries. And to put that in perspective, the city of Lancaster is about 145,000 in population. In the top 30 cities in California. And then in addition to that, they do outreach. So to chambers, religious organizations, police departments, fire departments, they have associations with, like in our case, the Clark County Chaplaincy, and really all comers. And anybody who wants to be on the list can be on the list so long as it's about offering a prayer. So as Bronson was indicating, spiritual guidance. And so they're completely non-exclusive in that sense. But they do try to generate the list when they do it. And then they have a policy of, I think it's no more than three from the same organization per year, and then no two consecutive meetings in a row by the same organization per year.
And do they have you seen their list, or have you? Have you seen their list?
No, I have not seen their list.
Because I'm just curious to know if they had, like, the Church of the Spaghetti Monster or whatever, the one, the crazy ones that have come up.
I told them that we had been receiving some interest from groups which were... new in my experience.
That's a nice opening.
That's politically correct.
That was, yeah.
He indicated that while there may be groups like that in Lancaster, even though they've been through the court case mill, no group like that has popped onto their radar screen, that they've only had what I think he termed very traditional churches.
So there's some that issue.
Have expressed interest. Right. And that might be part and parcel of their policy of keeping it constrained or contained within their own geographical boundaries.
Can you send us a copy of the Lancaster's list and their policies?
I've asked him for that, so he has my email, but I haven't received it yet. So
we just had this conversation Monday. Okay.
So we'll get that, then that'll give us a little more guidance.
I was having a little trouble. No more than three of the same individual in a year.
I believe that.
And what was the other
same
one?
Guy. Same
and
person.
Then no two consecutive meetings by the same.
Yeah, that'd be easy to adhere to.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But
right.
No more than three in a year might be a little restrictive.
Three in a year from the same person?
Or,
yeah.
Yeah, the same representative. And that probably yeah. would.
Mm-hmm. Sounds reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, because think about it, we got 50 weeks roughly that we actually will have hearings on. Right. So you figure if out of 50. The same person doing three, and if you've seen, it's a long list of congregations mm-hmm. and churches. So I mean, I don't think you'd have much of a problem. But I mean, I would say we need to go though.
I was seeing it as a difficult, could create difficulty for us. I mean, I have no problem with saying can't have you about every third time, but I would like to maybe use you for three or four times for the year, but with a big spread out in between.
I think that's what they just chose a number. You can throw a number, you know.
But it is a good number.
We're finding, already that it's, of course, we haven't gone out other than word of mouth, which, by the way, I have a Muslim person to talk to.
Good.
Could be really interesting.
Awesome.
But it's been, maybe because we haven't gone out, it seems a little awkward, a little difficult. Because we have no one knows about it until we call them up to ask them.
Right. They send out a letter again every November. They do. They compile their list. They do the outreach. Mm-hmm. They have kind of an ongoing program to encourage input from a lot of other organizations in their community to really try to glean who's out there.
Just for process, I would suggest that we do not contact anyone at this point. This is just simply inputting. We're getting input from them. Because otherwise we throw out an expectation. I thought you said that. You need to give us an extended invitation. We don't want that to happen at this point.
Agree.
If you don't do that, who are you going to have next week?
Well, I just want to make sure the process here.
I'm just saying.
Well, one by one, just simply to get something going until you get a policy in place.
Yeah, I think once we do that, I think we'll have a list of invitation to give them a date or something like that. But
eventually there will have to be, once the list is compiled, once the policy is in place, then, of course, then the invitations go out at that point. We just don't want to get the cart before the horse, you're saying.
Okay.
Thank you, credit.
So, fair enough. So we'll get more information on that, get the Lancaster information, go one by one for now until we get the policy in place and locked.
Yeah.
And like this last week, I talked, that no big thing missing a week or so. We have a vacant week, no problem.
Yeah.
No biggie.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, and even if we had someone, luckily Dennis showed up.
Oh, really?
Well, not luckily, David talked with him. So Dennis Fuquay was there and did the invocation.
Oh, cool.
But even if he wasn't there, I was just going to take a moment of silence for people to, send their thoughts and prayers to those who are struggling with what happened in Boston. So
I was thinking about
so if there is a gap, so be it.
Yeah,
still have a moment of silence or something like that.
With a special event.
Yeah.
But if no one's there for the invocation, I wouldn't even mention it or wouldn't even offer.
No, agreed. And that was because of the kind of
Boston,
special nature of that.
That'd be perfect, yeah.
Okay.
So CRC advisory vote. I've asked Lori Volkman, who does advice to the elections department of the auditor's office, to work on this. She's put together some thoughts on how the process might work towards getting to an advisory vote, some potential language. She got called to a hearing in Collins County Superior Court that started at 1:30 this afternoon. So if it's not critical, I'd ask that you put this to next week where Lori could come and talk to you about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay. That's fine. Totally understand. All right, so we'll make sure, and Glenn, can you make sure that this gets put up in next week's agenda?
It's going to be Lori Volpin.
Yeah. All right. And freeholder resolution is So Bronson, did you have anything else?
I think that's it for me.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get you back.
We already did the Hilton.
Yeah, we already did the Hilton
CRC.
One. Yeah, so you can get out of here if you want, man. Yeah. We know you got work
to
do.
Well, if you want to be entertained, you can stay.
Exactly.
Oh, nothing.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Bronson, for all the help.
Thank you.
Okay. Kelly, freeholder resolution research.
Right. What you have here is really just some information about how to access the information that's been researched. Because at the last board time, you're indicating that it would be better to have it on a drive where you could access it electronically than getting reams of information.
That's awesome.
Right.
I did make a printout.
It's a good
new
process.
You can
do that for a lot
like.
Of things. That'd be great.
One of the things that I did in addition to just looking at initiatives, I was pretty surprised. I haven't found a whole bunch of initiatives. Now, understand that these go back to the 60s in some cases, and so the counties don't have records anymore. They've
archived
them.
I would think we'd have to go back further than like 10 or 15 to be in this era.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, as I thought about it, it kind of makes sense. The threshold to get an initiative on the ballot is kind of high. So
I think there have only been 10 initiatives that I've been able to identify so far. Half of those have been from King County. That is on the H drive, and what this sheet does is it shows you how to get to this information on the H drive, just so you know, it's our Board of County Commissioners drive that staff here uses and the board uses. Okay. So it's under Home Rule Info, and then each of these little arrows refers to a subdirectory under that, so you can kind of get the information in the pieces you want.
Excellent.
But what I did find also is that what has gone before the electorate are a whole bunch of amendments to the charter. So I decided to create a spreadsheet tracking the amendments, about 117 altogether for all the different counties. And that's what this is referring to here, this middle section, is how many different amendments I've been able to identify for each county. And I've been trying, in fact, I can...
So basically, that changes the county form of government to some degree.
That's an example of
changes one way, changes back if they didn't like it.
Right, and so, and it has been a little bit of flip flop back and forth, but for the most part, it's been. I think Clallam County, because they're the leader in amendments, I think it's reflective of the fact that when they became a charter county, they simply replicated their existing general law form of government.
Right.
So from that point forward, they've been doing a whole bunch of amendments trying to become a more customized form of government.
So the only thing, like in our experience, we had the one ballot measure. We had several ballot measures in 03, 04. When was it? The last one? Here. Last time.
Charter. It was 2002 was the
2002.
Election.
So the last time we had the basic one that said, do you want to be a charter county? And then we had the menu options.
Correct.
But so they just did the one saying, do you want to be a charter county?
And they added initiative and referendum and threw it on the ballot that way.
Gotcha. Right. And then the rest of it has been by amendment.
Pretty much.
I gotcha. Right. All right.
Things like expanding number of commissioners and all that kind of stuff.
Our entertainment.
So that's the information that's on that website.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah. Wow. And as long as I am doing the handout.
So, and this is all in the...
These are the initiatives.
And this is all on the H drive.
Yes, that's all on the
Perfect.
H drive.
Good.
Now, again, I expect I'll get more information in as
oh,
I get
ones that
other
passed?
People respond.
Looks like all of those are ones that passed.
What were they?
Although maybe all of them passed. I don't know. Although maybe, or I don't know.
These have all passed.
So every initiative passed?
That doesn't make sense.
The ones that I've identified...
What's this other list in comparison? What's the first list?
This is chartered amendments.
Those are amendments.
Oh,
like you
okay.
would say, changes to the structure
so after,
of county
after you were chartered, those are amendments. Mm-hmm. And these were
motion
short list
initiatives.
So you can see it on there.
I would bet that the passage rate is pretty good, though, given the percentages that are required to actually even get something on the ballot.
Yeah, because
right?
20,
so what 10%, percentage?
15%.
Well, so like for King, it was 10% of the last county executive election, which county exec, I bet, I'm sure, is in the presidential year. So 10% of the number of people who voted in the presidential election year, which is a big number in King County. So if you got that many to sign off on a petition to get it on the ballot, it's probably something that has a good shot at passage.
Right.
That makes sense.
So it looks like a number of these are also changing the, customizing the county form of government.
What were they and where?
Right there.
Number of positions, things like that.
So another charter, yeah.
Another reason why you would have a distinct difference in the quantity between the amendments versus the initiatives is that the charters have a built-in frequency by which a charter review commission meets to suggest changes to the charter.
Right.
So about every 5 to 10 years, depending on the charter, they're going to come up with a slew of like 6 to 8 amendments to put on the ballot.
Like Vancouver does that because they're a charter city. And so the city of Vancouver has a charter review committee that comes
So there's no threshold issue like there is with an initiative where you have to, you know, it's going to cost money to get all those different signatures to get on the ballot. And so initiatives are just a steeper hill to climb for people. If they can go through the charter review commission, it's easier for them. Get to the same place.
Oh, in other words, the this is really commissioner initiated, and this is
no, it's initiated. No, it's commission.
But where do they come from? Where does that commission come from?
Usually, they're elected every 5 to 10 years, just like a board of freeholders. So it could be a quantity from 15 to 25, or it could be as few as 7.
Charter.
Right. They meet. They review the charter. They come up with their list of things to put on the ballot. They usually submit that to the council or the commission for an opportunity to pass it without having the expense of going on the ballot. And if the council or commission does not want to approve it, then it automatically goes on the ballot and the people vote on it.
So it doesn't require any signatures, basically.
Oh, no, not at all. They're commissioned to do that.
And then it goes, and either then the council commission can pass it themselves or put it to the voters.
So is a freeholder a charter commission member? So that is one and the same?
Like the original.
Same idea, yeah.
It's not necessarily the same person. They're starting from scratch is right. The difference. They're
so freeholder is just the initial process of putting it on, and thereafter that role is taken on by commission.
Every 5 years we put them on the ballot.
Yeah, right.
And the group gathers to see if they have anything on their mind, I guess.
Right. And the similarity between the two is that nothing gets approved without a vote of the people. They only have the ability to put it before the people. The people decide.
Well, to be clear, they have the ability to send it to the council, and the council can act and do it themselves.
But, correct.
Without a vote of the people.
Every 5 years thing.
Yeah.
So would there be no commission except every 5 years or so they would be elected first, and then they would be commissioned for about a year or so to evaluate and then submit changes.
But understand, every county can do it differently, and I think there is one county where they are not elected, but they are appointed by what would be the Board of Commissioners, but it's a county council.
They could probably do it like they do the salary commissions, too, where they just draw random voters from the voter rolls and ask them if they want to do it. That's how they do the salary commission.
Really?
Anything's an option.
It's totally random.
Wow. Okay. So we have a bunch of information on H Drive. Are you still kind of digging to find more on the kind of initiative and referendum side then?
Yes, but my only caveat is that I can get back to 2000 pretty well. Getting back to 1990 is more difficult.
Yeah. We're looking for examples more than anything else. So 2000, that's like 12, 13 years worth.
Yeah, that's plenty.
Okay.
Don't do any work beyond that.
And then, so when do you think you're going to have some, kind of come back to us and so that we can figure out?
Frankly, you have a very substantial amount of information before you now. The only one that I'm getting more feedback from is
the position of county auditor.
Their system didn't really work as well.
Failed.
So they're doing the research. I guess it's really in your ball, you're into the ball court where you want to go from here. There is enough information there to.
So let's take the time, go online, take a look at the information you've given us. What other information, kind of before we come back?
Yeah, the copies of their charters that were adopted.
Those are on the H Drive.
Okay, they're already there? Great.
Yes.
Okay. I wouldn't necessarily imply that there's a correlation, but I am curious with these changes of forms of government for these six counties, you being economic development smart, is there any, how are they doing economically? Is there any before after contrast, or is there any kind of observation about their health?
I don't think from an economic perspective it made a substantial difference. That would be my initial thought.
Any other indicators?
Thank you. Well, I mean, if you look at things like unemployment rate, I just don't think there's enough of a nexus to say that that's the reason an unemployment rate would be higher or lower in a particular county.
So there's no observable kind of metrics or indicators of any kind whatsoever.
The only way you could really get to that would be to survey the residents to find out whether they felt it made a difference in their lives.
Mm-hmm. You know what's really the most thing in common with all these counties?
What's that?
Most of them, with the possible exception of Clallam, and only I say possible, have at one time or another, probably when they passed their charters, been swimming in money. Whatcom County doesn't seem like it's very wealthy, but they have this huge influx of Canadians. They haven't had to raise their property tax since forever.
Mm-hmm. Can you get the year? Is it in their charter as far as when they originally became charter counties?
It's on the H Drive on the matrix.
It's a good thing to look at and see, kind of given the how the economy was during different times.
Yeah, I have faith in people, and sometimes they could be more restrictive in themselves. For example, when you have teenagers act as judges and punishment of other teenagers, they're much more strict than the judges we have.
Because they're teenagers.
Yeah, they know.
They're mean.
So here's a couple here. Reduce initiative threshold from 10% to 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Failed. Another one from 8% to 4%. Failed. Well, the general public know the consequences
of having a whole bunch
of lowering it or making it too easy. And you see those that have failed. It's really interesting. I'll make a copy of that because I like to go back just for chuckles, just to see it.
And you do have all that on the H drive. You can print that out or send it to
you. You're assuming I can find H drive. with directions, okay.
So we got a bunch of, go ahead.
Just a little bit of feedback on this. Mm-hmm. On those initiatives or those changes here that succeeded, we might just look at and see what good ideas did they have, and you don't necessarily have to go through the process of having the initiative kind of thing to do that. We might get some good ideas out of here what they did. And think, well, we could adopt some of those things just simply because it just ended up being good policy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
You don't have any examples of referendum. The referendum is.
He's going to work on that.
Oh, okay. Because the referendum is the one that would say to Clark County Commissioners, I want CRC on the ballot.
Or, I don't like what you guys did on.
It's a disagreement from what the commissioners did.
I don't like
then,
the baseball
right?
team. So you just
were there any referendums?
There are two kinds of referenda. One is when an ordinance is passed by the commissioners or the council, and the people essentially rebel against that, and they say, usually it's a lower threshold, about 5%. And they say, hold on, we want the people to vote on that. And a classic example of that was when the Port of Vancouver tried to pass a property tax, and that was a referendum. But referendum is also a term used for when a commission or a council is essentially saying, we like the idea, but we really think instead of just us voting on it, we should ask the people to vote on this. It has that kind of magnitude for the community, and so they refer it to the electorate for the vote. They don't really approve it. They just say, we're going to refer to the people to make this decision. Right. So those are the two kind of referenda.
Cool. All right.
So I haven't found any referenda, frankly, but
We will inevitably have a lot more questions after we've had a chance to really dig in and read all of this and come up with. I like the idea of kind of looking at what good ideas they came up with, even regardless of charter or no charter.
On the agenda next week.
What's that?
On the agenda next week.
Is a week enough time to kind of do the research? You want a couple?
Well, we should bring what we have next week.
Sure.
Ongoing.
Really, the bigger question on this is. Never mind. Forget it. It was my brain clipped back to the previous agenda
email
item.
To all the elected officials and say, please tell me what you're afraid of.
All right. Smart guy. All right, here we go.
The only last thing is that what was done in 2000 and 2002 is also on the H drive because for comparative purposes, you might want to consider that as sort of our baseline.
Yep, I see it right there. Excellent. So we'll take a look. We'll come back next week and make sure that's on the agenda as well.
And we have read-write capability on the H drive, right? We can put other documents and comments and that kind of thing in there. Yeah, great.
Sure.
We have accurate. Great.
Yeah, but don't be changing historic documents on there, man.
No.
Just because you can. At least track changes on it for me.
I like changing history.
That's why I like. What is the name of that program? There's a program that people use a lot. Heather uses it all the time. That you can have one place where everybody can start editing documents and
Dropbox or whatever.
No. It's not that either.
I'm sure.
Blog.
No,
I know what it
blog.
Is. We just use it on my LCC project. I can't think of the name of it. Though.
I'll think of it.
Not forum.
No.
Not Wiki.
No, it's RCWs. where it's a shared document.
Well, Google Docs, SharePoint. You can do that.
Google Docs, yeah. Google Docs, SharePoint. That's what it is. Yeah, thank you.
SharePoint. The latest version is Google Drive now.
Oh, is it really? Okay, cool. All right. See, now I know something. Excellent. Because I'm not good at that stuff. All right.
I use it, but I don't share it.
Nice.
My own sandbox.
Nothing wrong with that. All right, so we've got CRC ballot measure. They're coming back to us. Update on 179th Interchange Project. Kelly.
Okay.
And
so
tight.
The board question on this was, what's going on with that? Because we've had this LRF funding capacity just sort of sitting out there. In support of that project, which is $12.5 million over a 25-year period. What I am finding out from Public Works and asking them the specific question of where are we really at on this is that we're not moving forward on it. It is on hold, but it also has been dropped off of the Transportation Improvement Program. So that's, in my book, that's less than on hold.
Which is the 6-year.
Yeah. So no movement forward. It cannot go forward without that retail component, the regional retail center in the southeast quadrant of the interchange. And the reason is that the construction project alone would not generate enough sales tax to boost us up to the $500,000 threshold to reap the LRF money. So it doesn't pencil from that point of view. And otherwise, the other problem is that even with the LRF, the great bulk of the cost of that project would be on the back of the county road fund. So LRF is maybe
500 a year.
Not even a third of it, perhaps.
So Glenn, this is for something I would ask Bill if you were here. We had been working toward a work session on the tools we have available to us to help get property land ready for jobs. We have tools, you know, in the toolbox that we haven't used. We have tools that we are using. There was we've had a lot of conversation about that, and it's something that Commissioner Rendon brought up in our retreat, and we've followed it up a couple times to say, all right, where are we at on this? 179th Hub is an economic development hub that we have talked about a lot, whether it be through LRF or otherwise. It sets itself up well for several different potential economic development tools that we should talk through at a work session. So could you please find out where we're at in having that work session?
It's been scheduled, and it's in May, I believe.
It's
coming up.
May 17th, if I remember.
Because certainly the interchange, the 179th interchange, is part of the development of that area and doing pre-permitting or planned action or, you know, infrastructure, whatever the tools we may be able to use to help really prime the pump for that economic development hub.
That's
we should be
really an
including.
Agenda item for RTC. Right?
We bring it to RTC.
Yeah, it has to be on our list first.
Yeah, we would bring it back to them. And it was, we now have something that we didn't have before, and that's an agreement with Killian. I think he's got 5 years, is that right?
Yeah, I forget
right.
The
time.
Yeah.
Get 5 years.
Because we reserve trips for a certain number of years.
Right. Yep. And they seemed eager at the time, mm-hmm. or pretty certain that they would know at that time that they could move forward. But we've also had some loose conversation on the other side also. So I think one way or the other, we may move forward with that. One of the biggest things is put the brakes on and put it on the high priority or on a low priority list with the roundabouts they placed on both sides and the unwillingness for the state DOT to be involved in replacing that overpass.
Right.
And whether or not we could make add additional lanes underneath there and leave the supporting the other support there to where you could drive on both sides of that support. I don't think that was looked at a whole lot seriously. But they had some real wild configurations. But anyway, but the good thing is that we now have Killian. We didn't have that before.
Has Pete's team been out there and studied that enough to be able to actually say what are the limits of what can potentially physically be done there?
We actually had a consultant and a whole team of probably 20 people working on that in several meetings. And then when it come down to the point of with the financial dollars not being there, with the lack of commitment from Killian, and the fact that we had a little bit less transportation dollars, it was easy to pull off on her.
So yeah, there's plenty. Yes,
we have lots,
and they should be able to be there at that work session to help us as well.
Yeah, that'd be good. Related to that, we had that workshop today with Pete's team.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. They had this big long list of projects on there, not in priority order, and I compare that to the TIF projects that are in point order. And the question is that I put to you, fellow commissioners, is the evaluation of the priority of those projects, how long it has been since we looked at that, if we want to go through the process of assigning a similar point system, weighting system, that really helps us to align our priority for business development to make sure that those sequences, that road's priorities, are consistent with those priorities.
Good point.
It's been a few years. Last time we did it, though, we increased the number of points for economic development. That was the primary reason. We went back into the scoring criteria and we put a little heavier weight on that, a little bit heavier weight on preservation and maintenance as opposed to, you know, capital, and we put a little bit and made sure that safety was still getting a fair number
for,
of points.
For the TIP project we did.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm talking about the list that Barney showed us this morning. Those are not the...
That was just strategy. There was no projects associated with that.
It was internal stuff he was doing.
But
you're right. I mean, the prioritization Steve's talking about is exactly the way they prioritize their 6-year project.
But we can, yeah. I mean, it's worth having a conversation with them about, because there may be, this board may decide, well, we want to do the weighting a little differently and apply the rating to different things and not just the 6-year TIP.
We put in place the criteria, and then they moved them around.
We put the points to it.
They moved them around, by the point.
The weighting system, we never initially put it into a prioritized, just simply simple weight order.
Yeah.
But then, depending on other things, they have the freedom to be able to move things around, to be able to find out there's funding for this, there's opportunity for that, to be able to pull those ones that that work themselves into the six-year list. The ones that are off that, they're not even candidates for that.
Yes.
But we ought to consider some of those other candidates that, for instance, are on economic, what I call core business corridors that aren't on the list, like 50th Avenue. Because, I mean, they don't make it to that because of that. So that would be something that we ought to really consider.
We can include that we have focused public investment areas, and we reduced the number of focused public investment areas from way too many to a reasonable number, and there were a top three that we identified in 07? I forget when it was when we identified the top three of focused public investment areas, but it's a good question. And I don't know the answer to, did we include that as part of the scoring criteria for the TIP? And I don't know.
But related to this, the last workshop we had prior, you know, what was the last week or two, there was also the, on TIPs, TIFs, that they were going to go back and make it more realistic, about half the number of projects, so that we can get the dollar amount per trip reduced. And so that is being evaluated. So I'm thinking now would be the time to really provide more input. So when you're going to pull stuff off, make sure you pull the stuff that's you don't necessarily pull stuff out that's in the blue business zones.
Well, just to be clear, though, that when they're pulling that off to lower the cost, that's on the 20-year capital facilities plan. That's not developed through prioritization of economic development or otherwise. That is, here's your growth area. This is what is reasonably necessary for infrastructure to serve that growth area. That's the state requirement. That is the balancing of the equation. What they're talking about is saying, well, if we're not getting as much growth as we had anticipated, then maybe we don't need as many of those projects that we had anticipated. But as far as the prioritization, the only prioritization for the 20-year is it reasonably necessary to serve the population that you're anticipating when you move the boundaries?
Yeah, and I expect there's a bit of a mix there. There's a little bit of interaction there. I just wanted to... I'll work with Pete just to make sure I'm up to speed and that we are taking advantage of the opportunities as smart as we can to make sure that our priority for business development really works its way through the system.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Totally agree.
Okay.
All right. So that is 179th, and we'll look forward to that work session coming up as well.
May 8th.
Great. It's coming up sooner than I'd even thought. Excellent. Commissioners. Commissioner Mielke, what do you have?
Oh.
And I'm sorry, before I get into commissioners.
Chris is here for one of my
items.
For your TIF development fee waiver notice. We got one issue we need to address with the board.
So, just because you're worth more than I am, why don't we go through that item quickly and then we can get you out of here, because we're going to be here a little while doing a bunch of other stuff. I don't want to have you sitting around. I appreciate you coming up.
So I'll tee this up. After the work session for TIP and development fee waivers, you guys had ideas to expand the program. We wrote those on the board at board time. Staff has begun putting the expansion into the resolution, so putting it to pen. This is the notice. It has to go out here relatively soon because your hearing is May 7th. You guys wanted it as soon as possible. The problem we're having with your concept or your idea to kind of vastly expand the TIF waiver is
our ability in the near term to legally do it. And so you'll see that in the second paragraph of this notice. You may see it in the resolution, depending on how the finishing touches are put on it when it comes to you. But I'll let Chris get into the specifics. But generally, the issue we're running into is this is a vast enough change in what we're doing with TIF in terms of what we would be waiving that legal is saying we need to tie it to an actual comp plan amendment this fall, and therefore wouldn't be able to do it logistically until January of next year. And so that's kind of the snag we're running into with our recommendation.
Can you walk us through that?
Well, sure.
Having said that, and you mentioned down here, I think it's an example of tying it to the unemployment rate. No, is that the example?
Well, that was the goal of the board. But yeah. Let me just walk through it, if you don't mind, just so that because I want to make sure I've covered everything that you wanted me to cover. First, let me just say at the outset that this doesn't apply to nonprofits. The board wanted to be able to tie this. I mean, the goal is to generate jobs, but the board, I think, tied this to projects that will generate property tax or that will pay property taxes. Property taxes are what are going to fund these fees, so the people who benefit from it are the people who pay property taxes. So I think your first goal was that it only applies to in the commercial industrial zones and only to for-profit businesses. Now, you've got a look on your face like you're not sure that's what you wanted to achieve.
We didn't have that conversation.
Okay.
Well, yeah. At all. And I struggled with what to advise Chris on because he's talked about commercial versus industrial, and I was saying, well, the conversation was surrounded around anybody who created a job, but we got into that conversation about home businesses, and so we started there. I didn't know exactly what to tell them because it gets much more difficult to write the language, I think, for...
Well, I can do it. If you want to include, for example, do you intend churches to be able to...
Let's stay on the for-profit side of things.
Okay.
I'm just talking about the home business stuff. Anybody who's creating a business-type environment, correct?
No.
Because we get into like
not, this was not related to business activities. It was relating to zoning. If it was zoned for a business parcel, then it qualifies, right?
So non-residential?
Yeah.
Pretty much any non-residential is what we went for.
But some activities can occur in virtually any kind of zone.
What we ought to start with is what is the rule and then consider the exception. So basically we want to make sure that we can agree on the rule.
Sure.
What is the norm, the 80%? And that is clearly defined by zoning, right?
Zoning.
We have a finite list of those zones.
That's right? What we did in here, but the struggle was home businesses, or kennels, things that are allowed in residential areas with special use permits. What do we do for those?
Well, that's special use, so that's not considered
all right,
them
so
first.
We're good then. I think we're good with what you
keep
put
it simple.
In.
Yeah,
I am. I just want to make sure I also mirror what you really want me to accomplish.
I think we're good.
Okay. So the original thing, this will waive all on the development side, the projects that we mostly have are subdivisions and site plans, and on the building permit side, it will waive. And for those projects, it'll waive the permitting, the development, and inspection fees. On the building side, it will waive all building permit application, plot or plan review, and inspections that go on the building sides, and this will apply for the building code, fire, mechanical,
plumbing,
and plumbing codes.
Did you get Marty did a whole spectrum there, because you're saying it as if it's like for everybody on every action. We had everything from tenant improvements on one end, and we had
land in a dream.
Yeah, exactly. A deed in a dream. Yeah, a deed in a dream on the other end of it, and we had different standards, and then they were going to develop the standards for in between. So there were four levels.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I have it, but I think this captures that.
Well,
it will apply to all of them, but really what Marty talked about was different percentages.
Right.
And you want to go with those percentages.
Well, there was only
one exception.
Okay. We had column 1, A, B, C, D, and column D was the only one that had one or two cases. One was retail.
Right.
Yeah.
And that one was the one exception that said you bring it down to 50% on which fee was it? Development fee.
Okay.
If they're, when they finally get into business, if their average of all their payroll plus benefits ends up being greater than the mean for the medium for the county, then it went from 50% waiver to 100%
waiver. That's right.
And we'll have that. Well, I've got that.
Okay.
That's I'm just worried about that one question.
Right.
We don't feel like we can do the TIF until January. We need to.
Well,
you need to know that.
You mentioned subdivision in your list there.
He didn't mean to do that.
Okay.
Well, you can have industrial subdivisions, and we have commercial and industrial ones.
Yeah.
We want to provide the same benefit, creating job enterprise or job opportunities.
Whether it's a subdivision or not, it's zoned to qualify.
Sure. Yeah. Right. And there's and we had triggers on, well, it's only good for so long, so you don't just get
6 months
subdivide the land for an industrial complex and then not do anything with it.
Yeah. Okay. So that's so the TIFs, do I understand correctly that the plan cannot change until it becomes effective January?
Well, what the statute says is that the county, the program shall provide for, it just talks about updates can only occur once a year. This year, so you can't do it again until January of next year.
Is that state law?
Yes, but you may have an exception that may provide you some relief. I found in here a provision that says the amendments may be considered more frequently than once a year, and the exception applies to capital facilities, and it talks about amendments of the capital facilities element of the comprehensive plan that occurs concurrently with the adoption or amendment of a county budget. So if you're
concurrent,
we're in.
Well,
what about supplemental budget?
Well, supplemental's end of the year. You mean omnibus. Omnibus is in April.
Yeah.
Well, we can't fit that in more than likely. It's already advertised.
Just tack it on there, Glenn.
But, you know,
it has to do with budget.
Well, we have a supplemental coming up at the end of the year. I mean, it depends on, is that the rule you can't implement until you have it taken in a budget action? Is that correct?
Well, that is an exception to the otherwise rule that you can only amend your ordinance your account plan once a year, and this will require an amendment of the capital facilities plan because we're changing in the 6-year term what the funding sources are. So this gives you a special exception if you amend your budget. Now, we could either, one option would be to delay your omnibus budget.
No, we shouldn't do it. You guys can have a supplemental anytime you want. If you want to have a supplemental after the omnibus just for this purpose, you're certainly.
But I think they're set to, the hearing dates are almost the same, anyways.
Well, within a couple weeks.
And we're in 2 weeks.
Can't you sync them up?
I would think so. It might be the same thing.
If we can use that exception and have it be part of a budget action.
And it's not really a numbers thing. It's just we're doing it together.
We're doing it on behalf of them.
So can you see if you can sync that up and then...
Okay. I certainly can look at that. We've got to make sure we get it to the PC before we get it to you. And then we'll get it to you. I think we're scheduled to go to hearing on May 6th, is my memory. That's why I say we're really close. One option would be to start your hearing on the omnibus bill and continue it for a week and not pass it until the following week. Take this up and then just do them together.
That's true. Could do that.
So there is an option.
Figure out the strategy.
Just trying to get it out there.
Find a way.
Yeah, find a way. You guys, it sounds like you're really close. It's just a matter of getting that, getting the timing right on it.
They're a week apart.
So basically, so we do the omnibus and we just continue the hearing on the omnibus to the final to the next week.
I like that idea.
And then, well, it wasn't mine; it was Chris's. Yeah. So continue it, finalize it, do the other one on the same week. I like that. Let's do that.
Okay. Well, that's your exception then.
Good.
So it gives you the ability to waive the TIFs. We'll want to prepare. We'll get a copy of the capital facilities plan. And we'll make those changes in it so that it reflects this. And then in the meantime, I'll make sure that I have the table from Marty's office, or the table that we use for the percentage.
For the resolution.
Yeah.
And the notice went out today, so we're good there for the 7th.
Yeah.
So we're good.
Being that we're simple, it's clean, it's bite-sized, it's very clear, but I would like to talk about an extension that you just simply, an exception or extension that you brought up, and that is... for nonprofits, for churches and schools, to include them in this as well.
You do want to include
well,
them?
Well, and I propose that to my fellow commissioners here, because they also provide jobs, they provide service, they provide great things to our community. Why wouldn't we encourage them in the same way?
Schools don't pay. What schools don't pay?
No, but they serve our community, and they hire teachers.
No, I mean, we'd only apply to the development fees.
So you're saying if a nonprofit goes into commercial industrial, waive their fees?
No, if a nonprofit goes, if it's a school or a church, whatever, how do you define that?
Well, we would use zoning because we're keeping it simple. So okay. What you're saying is if a nonprofit goes into the proper zoning, they're good as well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, if you're doing it, say you have a tenant improvement, because, again, think on the simple side, and the simple side is the low-hanging fruit is tenant improvements to get people into empty spaces. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a nonprofit, for-profit, or otherwise, if a business is going into that empty space, that's good.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't, you know.
Well, we can put that in the resolution. Yeah. It just makes our notice a little
easier. I can think of one right now that's already coming.
You know, I may be showing my ignorance here, but I'm not sure they don't pay traffic.
I think high schools may, but do. I know because primary and secondary don't.
They
do.
Yeah, they do. Because
they pay
I never
traffic
pay
impact fees. I just
high schools may, but the others don't.
I don't know. High schools do.
And they have a big traffic
anyway,
impact.
And it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what we were primarily concerned with, the issue that came up with the nonprofit provision for me was primarily the school or the development fees, but you want to include them because they create jobs.
Include them in this category. So basically, the churches and schools go into what zoning do they go in?
Well, churches are allowed in almost every district except for industrial.
Okay.
Yeah, but mega churches can't go into certain residential zones. And
no, the idea is to open it up to churches and schools in whatever be appropriate. But
yeah,
they would normally start up.
Just keep it on the zone. Then it's
the same job creation zones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So other than not, or
don't worry about the use table. Zones.
Yeah.
That does keep it simple.
Okay, I just want to go back to the school one again. They're a big traffic impact, and their funding stream is such that they have that calculated into their construction. Whatever jobs are going to bring are already in the community, typically. I'm just wondering if this fits your pattern of logic that you're looking for.
When the school is divided into public, there's no planned public schools that are going to be starting up or expanding in our area, right?
Oh, there are quite a few. Mostly elementary
schools. What I'm thinking is private schools. Can you make it private schools? Because public schools they're publicly funded already, and they to be able to handle all that.
Now you're separating out uses. I would seriously just, at least for the purpose of getting to hearing, just keep it to, if you keep it to the zone, you'll have an exception every once in a while where you'll say, well, was that exactly what, but you'll get the job creation that you're after, and you're not going to be nitpicking over, well, do I like this type of use or does this type of use? The use tables are extensive. So I personally wouldn't suggest getting into it
I agree with you in that we don't want to complicate it. Whatever it is, it has to be very, very simple. If we could, and I just wonder, would it be simple enough to, when it comes to the school category, to simply say first of all, I have to know what kind of lands do schools go into? Do they? It just depends on what the use is. And
yeah, I would assume on our use table there's going to be many tables that say they're just an outright permitted use in that area. Some of them they're going to be a conditional use. So
okay.
It just depends.
All right. Okay, so what's the normal outright? Is it business properties normally accommodate schools fine?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, and they accommodate churches fine?
Sure.
There's a lot of churches
commercial,
and residential,
rural, commercial.
Yeah.
You got
churches are a lot
industrial
in all residential zones by conditional use, no matter how big they are.
So all right, I keep it simple.
Yeah, just okay. Let's go with the business districts or zoning.
Okay. Just zone. Whatever goes in residential zone,
residential
zone property.
Yep.
Okay.
And just keep it simpler. Cool. Do you need anything else from us, Chris?
Nope.
All right, thank you.
Oh, sure.
And thanks for figuring out a way for us to be able to move forward on. So that's awesome.
Thank you.
Cool. All right. So, actually, we got that from you. Back to you then, Commissioner Mielke. What do you have?
Not a whole lot. I know we've been missing our ongoing list because we've had so many other things going on.
Yeah.
Seem to be in time frame. I'm disappointed in the effort that the treasurer put forth to allow partial payments on property taxes. And I don't know if it's even the one. Instead of going back and allowing it within the treasurer's office. He went up to do something different in the legislature because he was already able to do it under current law.
Well, he was, I think, if I understood it right, the legislation would have given them authorization to actually, without setting up some sort of weird escrow account outside of his office and then taking it in twice a year, it would allow them to take partial payments directly into the treasurer's office.
I think his piece of legislation was internet bound, and the one that we were looking for was what the other counties had in place, where you just basically open up your or change your books to allow somebody to come in and make partial payments.
But they don't. I mean, they actually set up an escrow outside of that's what Kitsap.
Yeah, Kitsap's got the best example, I think.
Yeah, and they kind of set up an escrow, and so that people can pay it as if they're paying the county, so it's seamless to them. But the county officially is not breaking the rules because they only take the money in twice a year.
That's right. They hold it. You pay it to them monthly, but they hold it and then deposit it at the statutorily required times each year. Which it's is really good for.
Well, that's like
it's really good for folks who
that's
own
like
their
a
house.
Escrow.
Yeah, exactly.
But it feels like a monthly payment because that's right. What you're doing. You're paying the county monthly.
Those in delinquent.
Oh, you're talking about delinquencies being able to pay theirs monthly.
I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Because, see, that's the problem that we get into. Once they're delinquent, they can't bring it in until they bring it all the way up.
So they can't even do partial payments on the delinquency, huh?
No, and that was the problem, is that had they been able to, they might have worked their way out. But
does state law require, does that close that door?
I was under the information that Axel brought forth to us, they could make partial payment.
And well, then, I think I was thinking for the...
And the very first response we got back from the treasurer's office was, well, yeah, but we might need some extra money.
Well, I think they were thinking something different. I think they weren't thinking delinquencies. They were thinking of people in general being able to pay their property taxes installments, not people who are already delinquent. So can we get access to find out?
When we were face to face with him downstairs at the coffee shop, he understood.
You mean today?
No.
Oh, okay.
Nobody was down there today.
Nobody showed up. It's not for him.
No. I'll find out about delinquency.
We double check that.
Yeah. And just to elaborate on that, I would think that would be a very good thing to do because right now we're not receiving anything when they're delinquent, and that would at least bring some income.
And the other thing that if we would allow people to make payments directly to us, we wouldn't have the spike.
Yes.
The two spikes
right.
That would cause us to have to float.
But the two spikes is the other issue. That's the other piece of it.
By allowing it, we would eliminate.
That's right. We've got to get the law.
We could eliminate those spikes.
I'm not sure that's true because if it's being held in escrow.
No. If the law was changed. Because if it's held in escrow, you're still only getting a spike.
We would gain the interest then, though.
Well,
find out.
Related to that, Bill was indicating that right now, we don't have even the ability to receive online payments or just simply direct payments.
Yeah.
He recommends that we somehow find a way to do that. The difference is that whatever finance fee would be involved, we'd have to cover that through our general fund.
Well, you can charge them the finance fee. Yeah, you can charge people a 2.5% convenience fee.
Well, let's add that to the agenda for next week.
Yeah, that's really complicated. We have a lot of information on that. We can't just charge them at the counter, at least not the way the vendors are set up. We have a better solution now, and John Payne's pretty good on that one. So we could have to talk about
let's
that.
Let's find out.
And I think that's what the treasurer was trying to do.
Right.
He was trying to have a way that they would pay the like PayPal or something.
Well,
like
and
that.
We need it for community development too. For people like my son, you renew your dog license or whatever, you have to do that in person, or you have to send them a check instead of just being able to go online. And it is totally.
If we make it more convenient for people to pay the county in any way, we're going to get more income.
Yeah, it's an old book, like me. It's hard to change,
Fair enough.
Too bad. Credit cards, if we could.
I know they've told me that they need to do the switch over from
Tidemark.
I think Bill would like to be able to bring that forward next week to be able to just as long as we have us on the agenda, he'll be able to bring us more information.
So I'm afraid that we're not going to get anything this year. That our goal was really to help the people of the county that's behind in their payments come current.
Gotcha.
So it'll be something we'll put on later on.
Good.
And it's for FYI is that I was trying to get a hold of Environmental Services to go back out to see what they have in mind to visit the site. I haven't been able
to coordinate my time with theirs, so I don't have that done. And then another thing that hasn't come back to us that I'm hoping we get grounded again is excess property, because we keep talking about an additional income.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking to put more property on the property tax rolls. So.
Good.
And that's all I think I got.
Okay.
I'm good.
Got nothing?
Nope.
All right.
We're cooking.
Oh, wow. Let's see. Something to hand off. I met with Dave Rogers, who had a lot to say, but I boiled it down to a few key questions.
Okay.
One of them is, you know, the blasting reports. We had had the conversation with the mining operations in general, not with this specific one, just saying, all right, well, how do you do that? How do we make sure we have baseline information so that if something occurs, that we either know it was them or not. So he was curious about the blasting reports, because that's one of his 7 document requests.
I already ordered them.
Good. Checking steep slopes analysis, because there is a discrepancy in steep slopes between what they said was out there and what the actual, what their own engineering report says. They said in their original documents that it was less sloped than what their actual engineering documents saw. So that was something I'm going to kick off to him. And then they're still having issues with the wells. Bottom line, I just asked him, I said, what is success, you know, other than you moving or them moving, what is success? And the bottom line that I could kind of get out of him was, you're getting the truck traffic mitigated to the point that the dust isn't an issue and that they're slowing down a little bit. That was one. The second one was the water, making sure that those who don't have, and he's on public water and he'll moan about how he paid for it and he shouldn't have had to. But bottom line is, he's like, look, I got lots of neighbors, I have gym stars who come up the road and say, I don't have water, can I use yours? So he's like, we got to get that. And he's like, so that should be getting fixed. And he said, and the third thing is the blasting, having some reasonable expectation of when it's going to happen, then in that if something happened that hurt their foundation or otherwise, that they'd be compensated for it. Those were the three areas that, kind of after just grilling him for a while about what do you really think success looks like, that he pointed out, and which I think are all relatively reasonable. Now, how you get there, that's a whole different
issue. Isn't there already a notification process that's required for blasting?
There is, and there actually is a notification process required. Like what you had suggested for all mines is specifically in the conditions of approval for this mine. It just hasn't happened, and so the question is, well, how can we set them up for success moving forward? Because again, he wants to go 10 years back and yell at about stuff that happened. I'm like, I can't deal with that, man, and I can't deal with what a former board did. So what can we do to make things right moving forward?
Under the impression then that I thought it was the state that controlled the blasting.
WSHA through LNI regulates the blasting, and there's conditions related to who has to be notified, and they're all related to, you know, how many feet or miles those homes are. And quite frankly, I don't know what those circles look like.
You're telling me it's already in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it is a condition.
So we need to go back and request that Stordahl and Rachi provide that information prior to blasting.
What I'd love to do kind of is have, because Axel spends so much time on this, is have a kind of a buttoned up, these are the areas, you know, moving forward, this is what we need agreement on. Go to them and say, this is what we need. Can you do this?
Finite list.
This is what we're going to do. Yeah. This is the finite list. Mm-hmm. All right? And everybody nods, and then we say, all right, this is what we're going to do. Somebody's going to make sure that this happens, but simple, straightforward, get to success.
I'm not quite sure where we're going to be.
Because we've been dragging on this.
I don't know where we're going to be with the truck dust and speed.
You know, there are conditions to already deal with that. You know, and so there are a few tweaks that we can make to actually make sure that the conditions are met in a way that does that.
Yeah, and you can make these individual. So you can see, you can scratch that one off, scratch that one off.
Exactly.
This one needs a little work.
Exactly.
This is an appropriate time for a definition of a word.
And then we had a working agreement with them to not come up Kelly Hill. They're supposed to go up Gabriel and
actually,
down Kelly.
They have the full freedom to use the public roads any way they want.
But we had a working agreement with them.
There was an agreement on that.
It was
which road they would and would not
deal with
use.
Them, and that they there, agreed to
what,
no
what I looked at with them as I sat down with them, there was discussion, but it was never, that never became a limitation, an agreement, anything like that.
There are conditions of approval. We'll show them to you. There's conditions of approval, which shows the road they could use, how they could use them.
There's no route-specific conditions. But I just saw they have a sign. They have a sign now where they're saying the county is requiring them to use specific routes, which is not...
They use the road, they had to show that there were several things they had to show to be able to use certain roads, right? And so those are the aspects that we can deal with. It's not necessarily saying, you know, this road, that road. It's saying, well, you can only use this road if you have a turning radius that actually works. Right. We actually never did the analysis on a couple of the turn. We didn't on the turn movements.
Those source lines of documents. Yeah. This document, this page, this line says this. You need to refer to that. Otherwise, we're
totally agree.
Putting the conditions on after the fact.
Go back and ask the question again. Who are you talking to? You talked to Stordahl.
Mr. Stordahl and Mr. Raji came in last week.
The reason I'm concerned is this. Rogers came to me, and I was doing a follow-up. He went to you, and you're doing a follow-up, and he's going to you, and you're doing a follow-up.
And he's talking to me every day.
And he's talking to you every day. I think somewhere along the way, we need to pull back and say, I'm sorry. Axel's your man.
I agree. And that's why I handed it to him and why I ultimately think that getting a single, like you said, kind of a just a simple, you know, here's where it's referenced, here's what we need to do, and having Axel, look, the board has said this is where we're headed and this is what it is. And
bring that back to us before you give it to Stordahl and Rachi.
Like you were just saying, Mr. Stewart,
though, that Lucia Falls intersection, that's a concern of mine in terms of I pay attention to it, and I have looked at that condition. They had a signed engineer had to approve that a truck could turn in that intersection, and I actually just requested it again. I've requested it in the past because that's a dangerous intersection. I know it is, and I don't like it. And I had Deputy Nairmore come over, and he emailed Steve and I. We looked at the accident history again for the last 3-4 years because I'm worried about it. But their engineer did say that condition has been met.
They said one of the movements was... We'll talk about it, but get the actual information.
Then let's look at it again.
There were two set of movements that were required, and only one was signed off.
If it's not right, then we need to do it right.
I guess it comes down to it then. They'll have to come up Kelly Road.
Maybe, or you actually take a little bit of a chunk out and create a better turning race to make it. There's a few simple things that can be done to alleviate most of it.
Well, if there are changes that need to be made,
hundreds of trucks go around there every day, and they don't have a
problem. And a simple one is as you come down Kelly Road to Lucia Falls. Now there's no sight distance to the stop sign. So the last accident we had out there, where the guy he braked too much and went right through the intersection, was because he had never driven down the road and he didn't know there was a stop sign and an intersection coming up. So we can just put one of those stop ahead signs we're working on that
those
right
LED
now.
LED lights around them.
That's the thing. There are relatively simple fixes for it. If we can just lock them in on it, it's ultimately that.
And it was Schulte that went back up there with the engineer.
We did a lot of work last summer on looking at the speed limit.
He complained that if they were smoking or chewing going down the road. He complained about it. So I think we need to go back and address those things that we can easily monitor or reach agreement.
Well, and then just get it wrapped up. Because it may not satisfy everybody, but then at least they know and we're done with that aspect of it.
You want the definition of the word?
Which word?
Forgiveness. It's giving up all hope of a better past.
I like that.
Pretty good.
I actually really like that. Yeah. That is a tough thing for a lot of people to get to in our world. I like that.
And I've talked to
Brent
Stiers.
Oh, Jim.
About the water thing. And I said, you need to go talk. He's the closest neighbor.
Yeah.
And he gets along with them good. Mm-hmm. He's actually given up some of his right of way for them. I said, you need to go talk to them and work out a personal deal. And same with Rogers. He needs to go talk to a latecomer to payback fees because with Park PUD.
Right.
But they're not doing that because they're not listening to him. So they come here. And he's doing all four of us. He's working us like a puppet.
And the issue, though, is that the reason they keep coming back to us is that a former Board of Commissioners set all of those conditions and through a hearings examiner, ultimately, So they end up rolling back to us, and we got stuck with some bad documents. Yeah.
Missed all the good stuff.
I know.
Well,
and so you're aware, on the other side of things now, there's records requests from the quarry operator asking for what...
Figure
Roger. So it's
well,
starting
the more
to go
we can
both
do to wrap it up, the less we'll have to keep doing records requests and all that kind of fun stuff. I got two other quick ones. Joe Levesque came in and asked us again for a short letter to Jamie, to Congresswoman Gerard Butler.
That with Axel again.
Axel went to WSU. Oh. His comment, Joe's comment, coming back was, you know, I don't know if they even really heard me, and all I just want is just a short letter from you saying this thing could work. And so he keeps asking about it, and I don't know, Axel, what your take was.
I love Joe and I love working with him, but he won't let go of his ideas, and he doesn't understand that he's working in a public environment where policies are subject to the democratic process, and he wants this conditional memorandum of understanding that his ideas will be kept secret until Congress enacts them. And that's just, I told him that, and the professor told him that, and he's taking a private sector patent approach to public policy, and I cannot convince him that that's not going
to
work. And so
then,
I've only seen one of his five ideas. And so, yeah, if you want me to write a three-sentence letter from you guys that says, Ryan Hart and Congresswoman Herrera, please look at Joe's ideas and take them seriously. We can do that.
This is Joe.
But I've already talked
to him.
Well, and I've already talked to Ryan. Ryan said, I like the guy too, and he seems like he knows what he's talking about. But we're not going to give him a patent on his ideas for public policy. It's just, it's a strange approach.
He needs to go to the patent office.
We respect him. He's got so much diligence, and he's worked so hard. He's a true patriot. But at the same time, if we put anything in writing, it will have to be the truth, and that is, Joe, you've got a really good idea there, but the idea of Congress passing something that's secret until it's passed is an impossibility.
Or promising to give you back money for your nonprofit when they do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not
going to
do that.
So I think we need to write that.
Because
otherwise you're going to keep coming back with more.
Exactly, and that's why...
Sure, if you can get it into the military budget.
Yeah.
That way
it
could be a
secret. So I agree with you, and that's kind of why I bring it up, is I just want to button it, because he's going to keep asking it because he has the hope that it might occur, and so we need to figure out, like, how can we respectfully...
Yes, and if he comes back, we need to communicate to him, and if he comes back and not give up, then we have to make sure that we with all respect, mm-hmm. share with him, this is why we can't encourage others, the public officials, to do this, because we don't have the authority. It's mm-hmm. not a possibility. And everybody who knows why aren't the who sees this understands why aren't the commissioners helping this guy who won't give up.
Right.
I think we need to put it in writing.
Yes. Can you do that?
And it's a letter from you to Congresswoman.
No,
to him.
No,
to Joe.
To him.
To Joe.
Explain
and
to Joe.
Dear
Joe.
One objection that's in
you weren't listening to him. Did you write all that down?
Well, I did. I started a letter to Congresswoman Herrera Butler, and then he switched it on me at the end.
It's on tape. So
you. Hey, you might. Hey, there you go.
Okay.
There you go.
Letter to Joe.
Yeah.
Just
it,
put
with
the time stamp down, right?
And so what that really does, two things. It does, one, it allows him to understand that if he's going to be successful with this idea, if it has good components to it, and it's not workable, it says, hey, make it workable, because then you can make the world a better place.
Yep.
Adapt.
Yep. All right. Good. So bring that back to us, and, you know, just kind of, you know, circulate it with us just so we know, so that we're all on the same page. That all right, Axel?
Yeah. Not on the tape. Mary's got it.
All right. Perfect. Last item I had.
All those detailed notes down there.
Again, trying to get something wrapped up from yesterday was Bruce Barnes came in and was very thankful that Axel was up there and for Axel's testimony at WDFW, which was great. I actually went on the WDFW's website yesterday and now have a section on hoof rot saying this is now an emerging issue we have to deal with. It's on their June agenda. Bruce wanted us to invite WDFW down for some sort of grilling session. My take on it was, let's, you know, it is an agenda item for their June meeting. Let's let that occur. And then based on what comes from that, we can then assess next steps.
I got it.
Is that okay?
We'll put Bruce, Joe, and David together.
Yeah, actually, I've got Anna working on coordinating with Bruce and with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. To see what he wants in order to help us to accommodate a public meeting here so that we can get a local question and answer session going on in this building. You guys good with that?
I would. They're going to have it on their agenda in June. I don't know if we need to do it before then. This is my only thing. I don't think it's a bad idea to have a meeting with him at some point.
It's just trying to accommodate his request because he can take the lead on helping to coordinate. We just have the blessing that if you want to be able to coordinate that, have at it for the public meeting here. It's basically, we're not heading up. We're just saying the facilities are available. Go ahead.
So it's not a commissioner meeting.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Right.
I'm good.
Okay.
Is that good?
Yep.
He's heading it up?
Yeah, Anna's heading it up. Yeah.
Well, Bruce is heading it up. She's helping facilitate it.
All right. I'm good. That sounds good to me. That, yeah. All right, that's all I had. Staff, Axel.
I did go to that meeting, and what I'd say about the meeting, so I took a half day, if you want to know where I was on Friday. I went up there until noon and then went
home. We were. I was here looking for you.
But it was good. There was a lot of people there to talk about that issue, and it was a good, I guess, 1-2 punch. Bruce got up there and basically asked for everyone to resign. And then I got up there and kind of said, look, you know, this is an alarming issue for us who live with these elk and see them and stuff. But the takeaway for me was two things. One, the commission didn't seem like they had gotten a lot of information from staff about the issue, which was a little concerning, and they were pretty concerned about it. And then the director took it right on point. The director of Fish and Wildlife, he said, I'm going to address this right now because I'm responsible for the agency. And he made about 10 or 15 minutes of pretty pointed comments about, you know, where he was going to go with this and that he was going to take it seriously. And
good.
He basically apologized.
That's a win.
Everybody thought that the point was well taken afterwards.
Cool. Yeah, related, if what Bruce shared is that there was this 80-year-old retired guy from the disease control who understood. I mean, he was an expert in the field. And he said, if it is what I think it is, this could be something that could transfer to humans.
Right.
And so this may be something that, you imagine the disaster that would be if this ended up being the next H1N1 kind of thing because we didn't act on it. Because our health department didn't proactively go pursue that possibility, and here it's going across multiple states now. Shouldn't our public health officer pursue this and at least consider this, to take some steps to find out, is this a possibility?
Well, at least John Wiesman ought to be.
He's not under our jurisdiction.
Right? Yeah. So the health department gave us preliminary information. I don't even know who this guy is that Bruce mentioned, and I am. I tend to not jump to the conclusion that because Bruce mentioned a guy who said that there might be a thing that is contagious, that all of a sudden that we should get
I'll make
up
it an
in
action
arms,
item to find out if he can actually get in contact with that person, find out his credentials, and see if it's somebody that our own health department would recognize.
He did have some really cool testimony, but he's going to work with Fish and Wildlife, and they were very open to working with him. So we'll see where that goes.
So potentially have Dr. Melnick connect with this guy as well.
That'd
how about
be
that?
Great.
All right. Anything else, Axel? Kelly, did you have anything else?
Really, just sort of pass along information on the winery signage. The vintners are expressing the hope that they can put their own signs on the post that's housing the winery sign and the arrow.
Right.
So that it would be kind of a logo type.
And they pay for the sign, right? We already had this conversation.
We just put the post in?
Well, we put the post in with the general sign that says winery, and if they want to put their own name on it, buy around.
That's after they actually fill out the permit, right?
They're working.
So it's working a little bit on the downside for
Mr.
that.
Mr. Kennel supporter. Really?
I'm trying to communicate with cities. Where wineries are located within a city, or you have to go through a city to get to the winery, primarily Ridgefield, but depending on location, could be Battleground or Yakult. The pushback is, you know, that's starting to stack up to be a lot of sign, and so there may or may not be openness from them. So I'm working with them. We don't have anything solid yet, but just let you know that might be some of the challenge.
You have to have one at every turn. There's a lot of turns you got to take in this county to get to places. You know?
I got it, Mr. Chairman.
All right, give it to us.
Taller post.
Taller posts.
Well, a separate post. Separate.
You can see it from afar. I'm not looking for a decision. I just wanted you to know that this is one of those things. There's always kind of some
no good deed goes unpunished. All right.
That's it.
That was it? Mary? Great presentation this morning, by the way. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're a very good communicator. You should be in communication.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Something new.
Thank you. I'm back to listening.
No, it was great. It was definitely a good update for us to know how the inner workings and exterior work. Mm-hmm. So you weren't there, Columbian guy, so we would.
You were in Kelso?
Oh,
yeah. I recorded it.
It's recorded.
What happened in Kelso?
Yeah, what happened in Kelso, man?
They said that the plaintiffs had a good point, and they ruled it unconstitutional, so it's gone back to the city.
The signature thing.
CRC.
Got it. Well, the city already dealt with it.
It actually goes back to auditor, doesn't it? Now the auditor can make a ruling.
He told me he will research it and send it to the city. He expects
that. Well, that's about the... We passed the number, but then they had the whole content issue that wasn't decided by this court.
Actually, that goes back to the auditor, because Greg Kinsey then sends a notice of adequacy or something.
Right.
Then that goes back to the city. Yes. Okay.
So then it'll go back to the city, and they'll say you have adequate signatures, and the city attorney already said, yeah, but you have multiple subjects, so it is not valid. It's not a valid petition, regardless of how many signatures you have. That's what he said. Remember, because he preempted the decision on this by doing that.
Feedback.
But
I should be making something on the side driving the
car. It's a good decision from the standpoint of it still delivering the documents. Good.
Yeah, people will be heard. Hopefully the city will respond in a more favorable way to the citizens. I'd like to see that.
Maybe we'll have to show by the way.
People do not like to be disenfranchised, not in America.
Mr. Would you guys like to listen to the Community Mediation Services Annual Report at some future work session?
The what?
Community Mediation Services.
We contract with them for service.
So when people have...
I love those guys.
They are good.
Yeah, actually, I listened to
a meeting in Yakult Mountain.
Yeah, I tried to hook up.
They were good.
Mediations.
We went to the new synagogue out on 119th Street back in November, December, and they were there for this drug house. All the neighborhoods were there, and they did a great job. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed.
So they want to report back on their successes.
Yes, thank you.
So we'll do that.
What else you got?
All I got.
Do over. Go for it.
How are we doing in Hazeldale on that halfway house for minors? Remember the one that we had trouble
on Hazel Island?
Yeah.
Oh, the Hazel
about
house.
It for a while.
That's all.
We haven't heard anything. Yeah. Yeah, the boys.
They moved
into the city. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. That's why we haven't heard much for a while.
Put that on a recommendation for any other.
Yeah, moving the city.
How come the city doesn't get the pushback we get?
I don't know that they didn't or did. I have no idea.
Maybe they are. I do have something. In a local agreement, we have to put that on the schedule to talk about and plan.
By June,
because we need
June
to
one.
Have things we're done, decision part. Made before June 30, right?
Absolutely. No. We have to. It's 6 months' notice, so we have to give them notice of intent by June 1, I think, 6 months ahead of time, and then we have that 6-month time frame to determine what are the specifics associated with that, and then it goes into effect January 1. So then we would take action January 1. So the only thing we have to do by then is take action to give notice of intent. So we can.
Does it say what intent? Does it say we have to specify that this is what we're planning on doing?
Let's bring that. So next week at board time, can you bring us the exact language, please?
They met with their consultant.
I know, but there's specific language that we're required to do. There's magic words.
I know, but we were hoping to see or have some input back from their consultant to see if there's something that we haven't seen.
We may have a work session already scheduled on that.
I thought they were going to do, was it March 30 or April 30?
I don't know. I think we may already have set up a work session with this in mind. I don't know, maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I thought we had.
It seems like we would have coming off of the last
one. Well, let's ensure that we do.
We will. We'll check.
Yeah,
Glenn's got it.
Okay.
All right, cool. So that was your do-over. Glenn, you had one other thing, though, actually, a vacancy review.
Oh, I'm sorry, I did.
Animal control.
You have all heard about that. That's the animal control position.
Yeah, green light for me.
You've all approved it individually.
Okay, we got green lights? All right. Green light means go. All right.
Catch the critters.
That's it. All right, we're done. Thanks.